It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. We're going to kick things off with something that at first I thought was weird. Now I get it. Could be the future of Windows. Progressive web apps. We'll analyze Microsoft's quarterly report. Great quarter. That's all we have to say about that. And maybe tamp down those rumors about Andromeda. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 542, recorded Wednesday, November 1st, 2017. Here comes PWA. Windows Weekly is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/WW and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. And by Betterment, the largest independent online financial advisor. For a free 5-minute investment review, helping you assess your investment accounts, tax strategies, fees, and risk exposure, visit Betterment.com/Windows. No sign-up required. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft, and there's news galore on this first day of November, the second month of the fourth quarter.
Paul, nice. Huh?
Yeah.
I've never really considered it that way.
Or if you're in Apple time, the second month of the third quarter.
Paul, or
what is Microsoft's fiscal year?
It's their fiscal 18 Q2, but I was going to say, and it's time for the constellation Scorpio.
Ooh.
Hence.
Wow. Your birthday.
Xbox Scorpio.
Oh, is that really? Is that why they call it the Scorpio? She's the queen of the code names, ladies and gentlemen. Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft.com.
I really thought she was going to say, like, we're going to put the clocks back or whatever it is in the fall.
I don't want to bring that up.
That's coming this Sunday.
Yeah.
Yep. It's fall back.
Yep.
This is the last day for those of you who watch the show live that we'll be doing it at 11 a.m. Pacific.
Oh, here we go.
2 p.m. Eastern time. Well, it'll still be 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time and 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Here's an idea. How about all you nerds that live in other time zones? You figure it out.
19. Oh, that's why I only give them UTC. I don't go through all the time zones. I merely say 1900 UTC and let you do the work. That's on you at this point. So has it been a big week for Microsoft this week?
Yes, it has.
It has. But for some reason, you're leading with progressive web apps.
Okay.
That's right.
Can I introduce this and say why?
Yes. Mary Jo.
It was Mary Jo's thing.
Yes.
Okay.
What's the opposite of burying the lead?
No, you guys, I think this is the hidden lead.
Oh, now I'm intrigued.
Okay, so we've talked a million times on this show about problems with the Microsoft Store, how they can't get enough apps in there, how the bridge strategy hasn't really helped. You know, we've talked a lot about this. Then Paul, out of nowhere, comes out with this interview with these guys from Microsoft who are telling him everything about what's going to happen with Redstone 4 and progressive web apps.
Oh.
I know. I was like, wait, where did you get this? Like, this is like amazing, right? So. My idea was to lead off with this because when I read this, I had to go back and read this. It's a long post from Paul and had to read it several times to absorb it. But I want him to explain it. And I want to throw in questions like I'm interviewing him.
Explain. Wow. Okay.
Ooh, this is a novel approach.
Yeah. Yeah, look at that. The hunter has become the hunted.
Yes.
Webheart native.
I have written a lot about PWAs over the past, I don't know, maybe year and a half. And, I got to say, I talked to Jeff Bertoft and Aaron Gustafson from Microsoft on this topic, and they provided
a lot
of
backstory. Who are those guys, by the way?
Who are those guys?
I saw you mention them, but who are those guys?
Well, they're the guys most. Yeah, I mean, technically, I believe they're in the edge part of Microsoft because that's where the progressive web app stuff is coming from. But I've seen it's kind of interesting because I kind of latched onto this early, and like you said, they're with the problems in the what's now called the Microsoft Store. I see this as the mainstream replacement for UWPs. I think this is the future of apps. And by the way, not just on Windows. I think this is the future of apps. This is the kind of the promise of Java, which is the write once, run everywhere, right? But with the true native experience, even though these, you know, as these guys say, it's really kind of native-ish, but it's native app capabilities on every platform. And the progressive part of progressive web apps means that these things can scale according to the platform on which they're running. And that means screen size, obviously, but it also means capabilities. And so, you know, a progressive web app on the Windows platform might use Windows 10 style notifications, which are really rich. But if you're on Android or, you know, on the web elsewhere, whatever, it will use different, you know, what are native to the web notifications instead. So,
So step back for a second. To explain to people who don't know, what is a progressive web app? And is it different from just like a hosted web app wrapped in some kind of a thing to make it work on Windows? Or are they the same?
Yeah. So, they're not exactly the same, although a hosted web app, as we know it in the Windows world today, could be a progressive web app as well, right? So, it's a web app, it's a website that has a specific manifest file that declares itself to the world and explains its capabilities. And those capabilities can include native-ish things, like the ability to run offline, you know, the ability to send rich notifications and so forth. So, The background of this is that Microsoft, as one of their bridge technologies, brought a way for web developers to take their existing code and put it into the store, containing those apps in a UWP container and you know, putting it in the store as an app. And as they were doing this, they discovered Google was working on something called progressive web apps. And so they got together with those guys to see if there was some similarity between the two things. And if so, would it make sense for them to kind of have one side choose the other or whatever? And what they discovered was that these things were basically the same and that the Google thing was further along and made more sense, and they're basically going to get eventually we'll get rid of hosted web apps. They're going all PWA.
Oh, really? So that's interesting. Microsoft and Google working together on something.
That was a big So this is a big part of the story, for me, right? So these guys, in talking to them, referred to this kind of friendship they have with their peers on the Google side several times. And I watched and I recommend other people watch every time Google and Microsoft talks about this stuff publicly, like Microsoft did at Build. Like Google this year did at Google I.O. and then also in, I think, September at a web conference, they talk about PWAs and the state of PWA and how it works, you know, in Google's case on Android and what's happening there. And if you go back to September, they actually said, our friends at Microsoft, I thought, well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, and they actually are very friendly. And, you know, again, they sat down with these guys, this was about a year and a half ago. And said, look, you know, show us what you're doing. And they said, yeah, we're going to do this. You know, we're going to make this happen. And so they're basically doing on Windows what Google is doing on Android.
It's crazy.
But
how do you get those progressive web apps in the store? Like, are they going to have a bridge or how does it go? How is it going to get in there?
So it's two ways. One is an automatic way. Bing is going to index the web looking for those manifest files that specifically say, hello, we want to be in the store. You know, please put us in the store. Yeah. And those things will show up in Bing search listings on the web, and they'll show up in the store as well. And Microsoft will do that for you for free. You know, obviously, it's not like a money. They called it a land grab, but it's not like a money grab. If you're a developer who wants to put your web app in the store as a progressive web app, as an app, and you want to charge for it, you can do that too. You just change the manifest so that it's not grabbed automatically. And you can do that. They're going to allow people to submit those apps. In fact, very soon. In fact, possibly even right now. They won't appear in the store because Windows 10 today cannot run progressive web apps natively. But in RS4, they can. And so in a coming build of RS4, they're going to flip this open. And we're going to be able to see progressive web apps in the store starting very soon.
Wow. Is there an example of something right now that's out there that you would say, okay, this is a progressive web app, right?
Yeah, actually, I have an example I use every single day, and it's called Twitter Lite. So Twitter Lite, you can go to, I think it's mobile.twitter.com, I think is the address. I have it saved as like a Chrome web app now, so I use it on my desktop it's a web app. But it, you know, it sends notifications. I don't know about offline use, but it meets the qualifications necessary to be described as a progressive web app. It is an app that could be included in the store. It happens to be something that I use instead of a native app. You know, I used to use Metro Twitter. I always really liked that app. I've tried every Twitter client under the sun. You know, I've asked you a million times what you use. And I've never really, I go to everyone. I talk to Raphael, yeah. I talk to Brad. What are you using? What are you, why? And, and none of these things really work the way I want them to. And then I found this Twitter Lite thing. And I'm like, yep, this is it. So today I run it off the taskbar. It's a Chrome process, right? So it's running through Chrome. But should that app be added to the store, that's the version I'll use. I'll use the store app first.
So do you think, and you touched a little bit about this in your post, but I mean, why would Microsoft keep native versions of their apps, like say Office, right? Like there's so many different Office versions, right? Like couldn't they just say, you know what, we're going to make our apps progressive web apps too and not have to have all these different variants? Or is that like, is there still a need for native apps too in addition to progressive web apps?
Yeah, so the two halves here are certain workloads, certain app types maybe will always make sense to be on native, right? Games, for example. Certain types of games are always going to work better as a native app experience. I really feel like high 90 percentages of apps today could be progressive web apps and would be better as a progressive web apps because they would work well across platforms. So in the case of Office, it's a kind of a weird position because they have these legacy apps that are very complicated and do a lot of different things. And so I don't think we're going to see a version of Word 2016 rewritten as a web app, right? I don't know that that makes sense. I mean, obviously there is a version of Word that's a web app. I mean, but the full 2016 product, like are they ever going to rewrite that to anything? Mm-hmm. Probably not, right? So it doesn't matter that web app is one of the solutions it could be. Like, I don't think we're going to see them ever redo that, right? But I did ask them about that specifically because Microsoft Teams is something that Microsoft itself has promoted. In fact, at the Edge Web Summit virtual event a couple months ago, which, by the way, is worth watching. There's a couple of things in there that have to do with progressive web apps. They talked about how that app is actually being developed as a progressive web app. Technically, today it is not. And I think part of the reason is that the underlying technology required to be the number one core technology is something called Service Worker, and Microsoft Edge does not support it natively today, but it's actually in the browser. It's just kind of hidden. So there's a developer switch you can flip and turn it on, but in RS4, it's going to be turned on. And their plan is to basically have this one app that runs across platform. So Microsoft Teams is a major new Microsoft app, Office app. It has been designed from scratch to be a progressive web app, will be a progressive web app sometime in the, 6-9 months, whatever. And naturally, people at Microsoft, like these guys in particular, are going to the rest of the company and saying, hello, And I brought up, for example, I'm like, there are basically 27 different versions of Outlook. Here's an idea. Why don't we have an Outlook progressive web app, and it could just be the app for everything, right?
Yeah.
You could hit a URL on the web and browse it from your browser like we do today. You could add it to your home screen on iOS or Android. You could get it through the store in Windows 10. It would work offline. It would have notifications. It would have all the same functionality that we expect from whatever Outlook version we're using today. But today, Outlook is a different app everywhere. It's different on iOS and Android. It's different on Windows. It's different as part of the Office suite. It's different in Outlook.com. It's different in Outlook on the web and Office 365. Mm-hmm. There's all these different versions. Like, why don't we just have one? So obviously, people who have like an investment in a code base or whatever aren't necessarily too excited to have a new group show up and say, hey, by the way, we solved your problem. You should do this, But I think what's going to happen is right? I mean, it's my opinion. It's not like some secret they told me that I can't talk about. But they are – look, they're obviously talking to groups at Microsoft. The other exciting part of this is that one of the big issues on Microsoft's mobile platforms in particular, and that's not just Windows Phone, it's also the Microsoft Store on Windows 10, is that there are no Google apps, right? And this has been a source of contention for some time. Well, Google invented PWAs, right? And so obviously they too were doing the same thing. If you think about all their high-level apps like Gmail, Google Calendar, Hangouts, whatever they are, YouTube, whatever, it actually kind of makes sense for them to redo those as progressive web apps. And because those things are web apps to begin with, it probably won't be all that difficult for them to do that. Should that happen, that means that all those Google apps that were always denied Windows users, whether on phone or in the store today, will suddenly just become available. And the net result of that, whether or not Google does it, but I would say almost certainly they will, the net result of PWAs just happening means that that Windows store, the Microsoft store, which we have always complained, like you said, it was terrible, will suddenly be awesome, you know? That actually has a really profound impact on the platform, even though I know there are kind of purists who will be like, well, yeah, but they're not native UWP apps and, you know, whatever. But I mean, ultimately, this is what we're looking for, high-quality apps in the store that, by the way, can have native capabilities on Windows that exceed what's possible on Android or iOS or wherever you're running them.
So two questions from that. So if you've got progressive web apps in the store, do those automatically count as store apps that would run on something like Windows 10 S? Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And then Steve Luker asks, what languages would a developer write a PWA in?
Yeah. So this is not something I have a huge understanding of. I think most people would probably write them a Java, some JavaScript, something like that. And as it turns out, you don't actually have to use JavaScript. So,
but it is HTML5 or no?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Basically. Yeah. So anything you do HTML5 in. And there's some very powerful frameworks like Angular and React that.
That's right. Yep.
So, okay. Yeah. Interesting.
So,
would Node work? I wonder.
Yeah, I think any JavaScript framework.
That's interesting. Written in Node.
I've never developed this in the back end, so I don't. Yeah. I don't really very well understand how that stuff works. But yes, my understanding is that basically anything you can use today to make a website that is like an HTML5 modern website would.
Okay, so Node would work. And then, so in other words, you in a progressive web app, you do need to maintain a connection with a remote server for bits and pieces, or can it all live on your local drive?
Yeah, it's the progressive nature of this thing, I believe, also relates to that you can bring stuff down as needed, right? And so these things, like I said, can run offline. So it's if you acquire it from the store app, you're going to have something that you've installed on your computer.
But as it may not work with Node because Node requires a Node server running.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You would need.
It's basically, but they were saying,
to self-contain anything that could run in a browser without connection to the internet. Yeah. Okay.
You get.
So there are lots of apps like that right now, like Sublime. There are a number of apps that are. Basically browsers. In fact, that's one of the complaints about them is they're fat because they have to bring WebKit down with them.
When this first came out, the original PWAs were, in fact, it was like a Chrome instance that was occurring. And it was, that's not particularly interesting. And then it got much more sophisticated. And now everyone, you know, Mozilla's doing this. In fact, they just released a version, I think, on mobile that supports progressive web apps. Everyone's doing it. You know, Apple has been kind of quiet about it, but they've been also very quietly adding this support to Safari as well. And so... a progressive web app like Twitter Lite actually runs fine in Safari, even though they may not support the native add this thing to the desktop like Android has. They could add that very easily. So the other thing is you get very small install sizes. They were talking kilobytes instead of megabytes. It's a store app, so it's super easy to one-click on install. And Mary Jo mentioned Windows 10S. It's not just Windows 10S, remember, it's also Windows 10 on ARM because these things run natively on ARM too, and that gives you something really, really interesting because the issue there was always, you can run x86 apps, but what's the performance going to be like? You can run store apps. We know those are going to run great, but there aren't that many good store apps. Well, guess what? All of a sudden now there are going to be great store apps, and that makes that thing more viable as well. And that type of platform is the type where the few things you would need to be native aren't going to apply on that platform. We're not going to play high-powered 3D games on an ARM laptop. So it doesn't matter. You know, for all intents and purposes, the types of apps we're going to get from PWA are going to be great on Windows 10 and ARM. So that it's kind of an interesting push for the future as well.
Yeah, that is cool. Chrome itself, though, no, right? Like the browser is not ever
to
be.
I don't know. I mean, the Chrome browser is a Win32 application, right?
Yeah.
It's a front end, to the web that, install on Windows or the Mac or whatever platform, but would it make sense for them to make a browser that was a
Chrome Lite or whatever?
I have a hard time understanding how that would work, but I don't think so. I don't think the browser itself. But in a way, if you think about it, why do you launch a browser in the first place? It's to go to all these web apps, essentially, right? Well, what if all your favorite web apps were available as apps?
So, there's a great Wikipedia article on this that I'm reading. Because it actually did not originate at Microsoft. This was independent.
So actually, if you go down to the bottom of my article, I have some references at the bottom. And actually, the best thing I've ever read about PWAs was written by one of the guys I talked to, Aaron Gustafson. He wrote, yes, that web project should be a PWA. And I think it's maybe the definitive explanation of PWA I've seen so far. It's a really, really good overview. And it's very long, too. So,
should any website be
yeah,
runnable as a PWA?
Yeah, basically, yes.
Yeah.
But he goes through this, too. You know, what types of websites? That's part of his article.
That's a great source, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great article and goes into great detail. But
so you have service workers that are running on the local machine that provide the, you know, back end for whatever capabilities you need.
The other thing, by the way, from a Microsoft perspective that's kind of interesting is there's always like this overlap. And of course, with Microsoft, there's always that sort of embrace and, you know, extend fear, right? I mentioned like notifications. So PWA's web app supports some form of notifications, right? On the Windows platform, we have much richer notifications. They have all kinds of things you can do on the side with images, things that can occur. Okay, so they're going to support those on Windows, right? And you know, PWAs on Windows will support native Windows 10 notifications because they're better. This is the way it works. That's part of the progressive nature of the platform. But let's pretend that one day whatever body is responsible for this comes out with some web-based notifications that duplicate everything that Windows 10 can do. They've told me that what they're going to do is stop doing the native things. They're just going to – they'll always go to the PWA version if it meets or exceeds what they're doing on Windows. The idea being that developers don't want to have to re-implement things multiple different times. The point of PWA should be write once, and they want it to be as easy – as possible, and the developers, and then, you know, for users to be as consistent as possible as well.
So here's a good question from Sprague D, who's listening. How do you reconcile what Microsoft's talking about with PWAs with what the rest of the company is doing around making .NET Core cross-platform and making that the app runtime, right?
That's a great question.
I know.
Because this essentially duplicates .NET functionality. In an open standard.
Yeah. Not being an actual developer in the real world, understanding of .NET Core compared to this is that I think of .NET Core as more back end, and I think of PWA as more front end. You know, in other words, you're making a client application. You're making an app, right? Whether it runs, in this case, one that runs in the web. Yes, you could use .NET Core to write what is essentially an ASP.NET based website, which would be a web app, right? So, the reconciling there, I guess, is that that would be one way of doing it, and that I'm sure Microsoft and its own technologies will want developers who grew up in the Windows space to use that technology to create web apps that maybe are hosted on Linux or even on the Mac, which I think is the point of .NET Core, but are using .NET technologies, which they're familiar with, to make a PWA, which will now run everywhere. Some other developer who's out there using some other JavaScript framework, because that's what they're used to, and maybe they're on a Mac to develop, and they get hosted on Linux or wherever, they're going to use the thing that they use. And it doesn't really matter. All it has to do is have an XML file that's a manifest file. It has to meet certain requirements. It doesn't matter what you use to create it. Microsoft would like you to use their stuff, but most of the web doesn't run on .NET. So it will, you know, they'll support whatever.
So, yeah, you create a JSON manifest that says, you know, that's the XML file that says, these are the resources I need. The service workers are only necessary if you're offline. And you can degrade off if you're not online.
Yep.
There's no service workers on iOS, so obviously you would design this to work in an online environment first, and then degrade gracefully with service workers in an offline environment.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much that's happened. I mean, just in the Microsoft space over the past 15, 20 years, where you can see that they were kind of trying to get to this in a way, right, in various ways. We talked about, think back in the Avalon days and Longhorn, we were talking about you have a document window, and maybe it's like two columns of text, and it's wrapping around a graphic. And you resize that thing. And what you want to do is have it automatically reflow so it looks right no matter what orientation you turn that window into. You know, back in 2003, that was really exciting. Today, that's actually pretty basic. Like, we expect things to work that way. But we could do that on the web, too, you know, so – they've been kind of heading in this direction. You know, Microsoft with Windows 8 had HTML-based apps you could create for Windows 8 for the store. Remember, you could write apps in HTML5, essentially, with JavaScript, or I think possibly with VBScript too, but and CSS, instead of using C# and XAML or whatever other languages. So I feel like they've been kind of heading in this direction, and that this is like some kind of a perfect storm where Google, coming at it from a completely different perspective, because their perspective on PWA is mobile, and Microsoft's perspective for PWA is, well, hold on a second, it can be desktop too, right? I mean, you know, Google isn't doing a lot to promote that aspect of it, but that's where Microsoft kind of steps in. And Microsoft also kind of is innovating in that store space, because Google to date has had no conception of let's put Twitter Lite in the Play Store. You know, you just browse that on the web and there's a little pop-up that says, oh, by the way, you can add this to your home screen if you want. You know, maybe I think Google has looked at what Microsoft has done and said, hey, that's actually pretty cool. We should probably do the same thing on Android. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen as well.
Yeah, I think this is interesting because we don't know very much about what's in Redstone 4 yet. And if this is in Redstone 4, which it sounds like it is definitely going to be, this could be a pretty major new feature.
You don't want it to be active desktop, though. You want to. There are security concerns here as well.
No, it's just apps, right? So, that's the big part of it. You know, they were saying to me, like, well, we have web apps, and people kind of understand, or we have websites, right? So people understand websites, and we have apps in the store, and people understand apps in the store. Are progressive web apps this third thing? Do we have to call them out in some way? Should there be a special place in the store where we're like, well, these are the web apps, you know? And the thing is, they're of such high quality, or can be, that there's no real reason to call them out. Yeah. To a user,
doesn't need to know. Yeah.
They don't need to know.
Right. User doesn't want to know what the technology behind something is.
But by the way, one thing they will be doing in the future, it's not going to be an RS4, because obviously the first step is you want the app experience to be identical to any other app. So you can search the internet for them, but the store will come up. You install through the store. It's updated through the store, and you want to install it, one click, it works. In the future, they're going to add the thing that Google's doing. I think it's the thing that Google's doing. But regardless, the ability to just install it from the web, right? So you should be able to see a progressive web app on the web, and there's a button that says click, and it goes on to your computer. Then you have it. It works offline, et cetera, et cetera. So they're looking at doing that, but that's probably going to be future release of Windows.
So, wow, this is interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm really, it's taking this thing. By the way, I just, you know, I apologize. I don't necessarily. I mean, it would have been better to add Aaron or
the first web app, of course, was Gmail, and the whole idea of Gmail was you would use a browser and look at your email on the web, but it would have app-like capabilities. It would feel like an app through a browser, and this is in a way going the other way, which is. Now those websites, because you'll have database and even service workers, will come to your computer, perform like an app on your computer, but it's using web technologies and your browser, because much of the rendering is done by the browser.
Mm-hmm. Which is great, because actually that stuff has improved so much that there are modern web apps. I used something I can't think of the name. I used a web-based video editor last week that was astonishingly good. And I think people who have these kind of out-of-date notions about what's possible on the web are going to be a little surprised by the quality
of
some of the stuff that's out there. But even something as basic as something I've recommended for a long time, which is you can use Google to save a website to the desktop as an app. And so it appears in a plain window. It doesn't have the browser, Chrome, or UI around it. And I do that with Google Inbox. I do that with Google Calendar. I do that with Twitter Lite. It runs next to Photoshop and OneNote and, you know, Notepad and whatever. And it just looks like an app. It's part of Alt Tab. It's its own thing. It sits there by itself and it works and it pops up notifications and it can do stuff. You know, one of them is, but most of them are not technically progressive web apps. But even that simple thing.
Adam is an example. Adam is a GitHub designed programming editor that is essentially a web app that lives on your computer.
There are a lot of markdown editors that are web apps. Yeah. There's photo editors, video editors, which is, you know, astonishing. Games, obviously. Mm. If you use Chrome, you can go to the Chrome Web Store. Look at some of the stuff that's in there.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say the Chrome Web Store is arguably roughly analogous to the Windows Store in quality, or the Microsoft Store. But regardless of that, just go to the web. I mean, look at some of the websites. It's astonishing.
Yeah, they're built on Electron, which I presume is a technology that would be usable for progressive web apps, and it's JavaScript, HTML, CSS. Yeah. It's exactly what you know, what you would think, and yet it's a standalone desktop app. It doesn't actually even live on the web at all.
Yeah, I remember when Java first came out, it was so exciting and it was going to be so awesome, and they were going to support like these skins so that these things would work on Mac and they work on Windows, and it was terrible, right? It was just terrible, and I think like a lot of what Sun did, frankly, they were kind of ahead of the curve. You know, they had this notion of network computing. They had the idea of run write once, run everywhere. Yeah. And they were just maybe 20 years too early.
WizRC in our chat room says it's HTML with benefits.
There you go.
Nice.
HTML5 with benefits. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Isaac Daly is listening too. And he said, check out webassembly.org. And there's some things Scott Hanselman at Microsoft has written about using C# in the browser. So there's like, you know, things that are leading up to this on the Microsoft side too, obviously.
Yeah.
This is Microsoft good, by the way. It's interesting because this is good for Google. This is good for Chromebooks, if you think about it. I mean, this...
Yes, yep. Yes.
So Microsoft's being very open-minded, which I commend them for.
Yeah. Well, this I mean, I don't know as much about the Google side of this, but I will say this recasts the argument that must occur internally there about Chrome versus Android, right? They're putting Android apps on Chrome OS, and yet
that's not what they should be doing. They should be doing this,
right?
Instead.
You can you can make this kind of compelling argument that maybe in many cases you should be going in the opposite direction.
This would be better.
Yeah,
yeah, because it's janky. You're really Android on Chrome OS is basically an emulator. This is interesting. Wasm, a new portable size and load time efficient format. Suitable for compilation to the web. This is an open standard, by the way, the WebAssembly.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Except for there are some, you know, might be some security concerns here, but that does support, you know, it requires TLS, so you have at least some knowledge of where you're getting the code from.
It requires HTTPS.
Yeah, so, yeah. So I kind of like this. I think this is this is very interesting. I love it that Microsoft's supporting.
Well, to me, it was like a needle in a haystack thing because they've been talking about it. I mean, Google talks about it all the time, but there are two things that are interesting about it. I mean, obviously, I care about the future Windows, and like Mary Jo said, you know, the store has been kind of an ongoing concern. But I used to be a developer, and I was never a very good developer, but I'm still fascinated by these topics, and there's something about this that has triggered this thing which I've always sort of thought could happen, and it's just this ability. It is the Java promise, you know, that. It always made sense theoretically, and it was always terrible, you know, implementation-wise. And so this one, it's like, this is gonna happen, isn't it? Mm. You know, it's interesting.
Yeah. Huh. So
Me hopeful. It makes me hopeful because I keep thinking, like, what are they going to do to make the store work? Like, it's not working.
Well, by the way, you know, and we think about, like, just Windows as a platform, too. You know, whatever, Win32 versus UWP versus .NET, whatever. The fact remains, there has been no major new app development on Windows in many, many, many years, right? And now you can make a case that kind of thing can happen again because no one's going to write to just Windows. But if with very little effort they can make it even better on Windows and it works works great everywhere, the major apps now are all being made for the web. So this is just, I almost said it fell into the lap, but actually that's not fair. They're really doing work to make this happen. A different crowd of people running Microsoft would have said no to this immediately. You know, this required all the stuff that's happened to Microsoft to happen, right? The leadership changes and those product groups that are still pushing back today. You know, I'm using Outlook unfairly. That's not fair. I made that one up. But I mean, if we can pretend that they're pushing back against that, it's not too hard to imagine lots and lots of group of Microsoft doing that same thing in the past. And I think this day, today, pushing back against this kind of thing doesn't actually make any sense.
Well,
so anyway.
Hey, I'm glad you wrote this article. People should go to throwout.com, throwout.com, and read it. Do you have to be a member to read it?
No. Okay. No, I wanted to make sure this one got out to the biggest possible.
Yeah, and the links at the bottom for further reading are very valuable. So it's an introduction at a high level, and then you can go deeper if you want.
Yeah, some of them are videos too. So, you know, those two guys have both presented on this topic.
Right.
Just watch their videos if you want to just, you know, consume it that way. There's a lot of different ways to figure out what's going on here.
And it does feel like they're not abandoning XAML, right?
Not abandoning XAML. So no, I mean, as part of this, Microsoft is not announcing that they're abandoning XAML, but I mean, I guess
but this
it's one
is
of those
comparable,
things.
Right? This is the same idea, except it's more global.
Yeah, I mean, right. So this is like Visual Studio Code doesn't mean they're getting rid of Visual Studio.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
there's always
there are
these audiences that do both, you know, one or the other. So
right.
No, I wouldn't say that. No, I don't think so.
But it does fit into the same slot.
Right. That's right. That's right. And like I said, you know, they're very clear, you know, if that stuff catches up and surpasses what we're doing natively, it doesn't make sense for us. It doesn't make sense for Microsoft, let alone a third-party developer, to only support a Windows-only technology if the other thing works as well.
Right on, but that's kind of new for Microsoft to say
stuff
like
that. Well, that's what I'm saying.
That.
I mean, a few years ago, not that long ago, what I just said is a fantasy novel.
Yeah.
You know, so,
yeah. Well, look, Linux now and everything. This is a new Microsoft. And, you know, I don't know if it's good for Microsoft or not, but it's sure good for users.
Yeah,
I think it's good for them. It's good for them because what they're doing or what they have been doing hasn't worked, right? So
right.
I think it's good for them too.
Yeah, I mean they must think it's good for them, or they wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
As terrible as the story is, you know, people, everyone has opinions about things and how things could have been different or what they could do to fix things. Blah blah blah. The one thing I've always said is to give Microsoft some credit, regardless of what you think of strategy, whatever, they really have done everything they can in the Windows 10 timeframe to get developers over to this platform, right? They've provided ways for you to take your legacy code, whether it's on, you know, Windows Desktop or .NET or whatever, and bring it to the store. They've brought, you know, with the desktop bridge. They have the web solution where they're changing to PWA. They have all these different things. They've done, like, what else could they possibly do?
Yeah.
I think this is the one that is going to have broad mainstream appeal. And like I said, I know I'm a little ahead on the curve on this one thing, but I really feel like this replaces UWP as the mainstream app platform. I just think this is naturally what's going to take
Absolutely.
Over. That's how I see it. I mean, it's just an opinion.
Somebody's saying that you do need some of the XAML UI technologies like CSS Grid to do this. So it doesn't kill XAML, but it does replace UWP if it takes
over.
Well,
someone, someone had asked about .NET Core, for example. Like, I don't have a deep understanding of this stuff, but it tied to what I just said. You know, Microsoft also respects that different people do things different ways, and so if you are a JavaScript stack kind of programmer guy and you're using different frameworks over there, and that's the way you do things, use a text editor, not a huge IDE, whatever. They support that stuff in Windows, and that's how the web works. There's nothing anyone can do anything about that. But they also want to bring – they've got millions of people doing .NET stuff who know C# or whatever languages, whatever frameworks. And I believe .NET Core and certainly Microsoft's other efforts on the back end are to help those guys move forward to the future as well. You know, part of the Xamarin acquisition – not part of it. The whole thing was about letting people use the skills they already have to target mobile, which is crucial at a time when Microsoft's own mobile platform is disappearing. You know, you have to provide something for everybody. And that's what they're doing. I think they deserve a lot of credit for that.
I'm excited about this. I feel like we now have to rewrite our website. It's in Node. I don't know if it'd be a huge rewrite. I'm not sure what exactly. I mean, you have to create a manifest. You have to create that JSON manifest. And I've still...
Hey, you just look at the different capabilities. And say, what makes sense for this kind of a site? You know, and notifications, you know, obviously would make tons of stuff.
Oh, for us? God.
Yeah.
So the idea would be you go to the website, let's say it's twit.tv, and it would start a partial download, and it could be an app, it could be a standalone app.
Oh,
does it start at the website?
I'm sorry.
It starts at the website, or you go to the Windows Store and you download a packaged version of the website.
You could do it either way. Yeah. There are always going to be features that probably will be platform specific. I can't speak to Android right off the top of my head, but the one they mentioned to me on Windows is like live tile support. So, for example, PWAs on Windows can support live tiles, meaning that you open your start menu, there's a little tile, and it flips, you know, maybe it has notifications on it, whatever, pictures, whatever it might be. Android's never going to add that, right? Google's not putting that in Android. So that will be probably a Windows-only feature, and there are probably going to be examples of those types of things on every platform that supports this. And it's up to the developer to determine what makes the most sense with regards to that kind of support.
You know, it's awesome, though. This is really good. And this is why I'm surprised Microsoft's doing this. For those of us who run Chrome OS or Linux, because it will work on – it's completely platform agnostic.
No, but it's, but honestly, that makes tons of sense,
and native,
right?
And native where it wants to be. And that's what Java always wanted to be, with the swing libraries and all that crap.
So what if, you know, I mean, I don't, you know, again, we're in 2016 when I don't think we're ever going to see that in PWA form. But some Word web app, obviously Word is on the web. When you can broaden the user base of an application like that, not to mention all your other applications, beyond the 500 million Windows 10 users or the 1 billion Windows users to the 5 billions of people out on the web who might be using iOS or Android on mobile devices, who might be using Chrome OS, who might be using a web browser on Linux. It doesn't even matter. You don't have to worry about it anymore. You just support it. I mean, that opens up the app to everybody, and that's what you want, right?
And by the way, part of what's interesting about this is they are very aware of the issue of the developing world where bandwidth is light. So they're working on performant versions of this and so forth. This is kind of interesting. This is a Headline News is a website I read all the time. This is written in React. This is a React version of the Headline News website that is that has, as you say, specific notifications. It's real time. This is similar to a website, but it's in React and it's a PWA. I think this is fascinating. Now you got
think
me
about
interested.
Like
this is really
we talked about. we complaining about the store. Like we talked about an app called Newton Mail recently. Like, Newton Mail is an app that existed on I think the Mac for probably 2+ years before it came to Windows. For that small company to make the decision to support Windows and then to hire the people who had the knowledge to program to that thing and to make this product basically from scratch again for Windows is the decision process every little company or every big company has to go through to support yet another platform. The beauty of this is, again, that dream. You can actually have one code base. I mean, you still need to know something about the platforms because you might want to support things natively, but you don't have to recreate the whole thing from scratch. It's the same app. It's I always, a couple of years ago we talked about universal apps and maybe Android. Maybe UWP should run on Android. Like, that would make them truly universal. I think this kind of obviates the need to even worry about that.
Mm-hmm. Now, the real test, I think you're right, Mary Jo, the real test would be when Microsoft, if Office 2019 is in this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That'll show how committed
they
are.
That would shut them up.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
But at least
The things that are currently called like Word Online, PowerPoint Online, those things could be, right?
They practically are.
They practically are.
The plan.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Wow. I don't know how those were written, right? I don't know anything about that. But yes, theoretically, they absolutely could, yeah.
All right, let's take a break. There are other.
Maybe we can get to one more topic.
It's funny because I thought PWA. Well, I don't think this.
You thought it was going to be a.
Yeah, this is the lead. Yes, it is.
I didn't expect to find myself on the hot seat for this one, Mary Jo. Thank you for that.
Sorry.
Nice. We do have. Did Microsoft do its earnings already? The earnings for Q1 fiscal year 18. We'll talk about those. And a lot more in just a bit. Our show today.
This time I'm going to ask Mary Jo questions.
Yeah, it's time to interview Mary Jo.
See what that feels like.
Probably been eyeing this little thing I have in the back here, saying, "What is this Hydra that Leo has here? This is the new Ring floodlight cam. Fantastic. Ring is really going great guns. You have heard us talk about Ring, ring.com/WW. You've heard us talk about this for some time. It's the video doorbell that I've been using. Oh, gosh. I don't know. I got mine before they started advertising, I think 2 years ago. It's been a while since when they first came out. I love it. It's a doorbell that connects to your internet. It's an Internet of Things device, but, by the way, secure. Firmware updates automatic, pushed to the device. And they've been very good and responsive about all sorts of updates. So you're always getting a fresh new Ring all the time, and better all the time. But it doesn't just connect to your internet. It's a doorbell that connects a camera to your front door, a speaker and a microphone plus motion sensing. So the Ring video doorbell, in effect, is, you know, it's a security device. When somebody even walks up my front path, I see them and I get a notification on my phone. I can talk to them. And when anybody rings my doorbell, I can answer it. I can't let them in the door. It's not a door unlocker. Frankly, that's fine with me. I don't want a Internet of Things door unlocker. That scares me a little bit still. But I love the idea that that can say if the UPS guy comes, oh, yeah, leave the package right there, and I can keep an eye on it. I'll know what's going on. Now Ring's expanded. They've got coming a full security solution, which I saw the other day, and I'm really excited about. But this is the until that comes out, the latest thing. This is the floodlight cam. So what they've got is two LED lights, and you're probably familiar with these. These would go where your existing outdoor lights are, and you may already have lights that are motion sensitive. But this takes it to the next level, because not only do you have lights that will light up when somebody comes near, but you also have the best part of the Ring, the camera, the speaker, the microphone. So you will get a notification. This is the one I'm actually going to put on my back deck. So that's convenient, because you come up on the deck and it lights up. But if somebody else comes on the deck, I'll get a notification on my phone. I'll see them. I can talk to them. I can say, get out of here, you dumb raccoon or whatever, because we have animals that come up on the deck all the time. And if that doesn't scare the raccoon away or the skunk, I can press a button and a 110 decibel alarm, and this light will light up and flash, and that always works. It is awesome. This is fantastic. The Ring Floodlight Cam, it's a great partner to the Ring Video Doorbell. Over a million people now use the Ring Video Doorbell. A million people. And they're really doing so much more. They now have the Ring of Security kits you can get at ring.com/WW. This will give you up to $150 off the doorbell plus one, two, or three of the cameras, depending on your needs. And you can choose from the original Ring or the new Ring Pro. It's a great deal. Limit one kit per customer, because this is such a good deal. Ring.com/WW. It's funny, because I inadvertently entered ring.com/Windows, and that takes you to the Windows store, where you can download the Ring app for your Windows, for your Android, for your iOS. The Ring app on your desktop is fantastic. You're working along, somebody brings your doorbell or comes into your backyard, and you can see it and you can talk to them. Wall Street Journal's Best of CES 2017. With Ring, you're always home. Save up to $150 in a Ring of Security kit when you go to ring.com/WW. Ring.com/WW. We thank them so much for their support of Windows. Oops, turned my microphone off instead of turning yours on. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. Mary Jo Foley from allaboutmicrosoft.com. Paul Thurrott from Thurrott.com.
Leo, if I might.
Yes, you may.
Mary Jo, where were you on Thursday night?
I'll shine the spotlight on her.
I was right where you were.
Where were you?
We were watching and listening to Microsoft earnings last Thursday.
That's right. We were watching Frank play with holograms while the serious adults delivered the news.
Was he fiddling around in the background?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
He keeps posting selfies with holograms, I guess, to show, like, here's what you would do if you wanted to put a hologram in a photo, just in case you want to know.
You know, during a Microsoft conference call. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. That's funny. Well, he probably didn't have a lot to do. So,
Bella's talking and the Keiko demon from Stranger Things is rising up behind him.
Yeah.
We don't all know about that yet.
No, that was from season one.
Oh, that's season one? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good, because I haven't, you know, I've only watched a couple episodes. I'm saving it for a big binge.
I won't ruin it, but it's like how it ends.
Well, I hope it doesn't end, because I want season three is what I want.
I think you're going to get season three.
I have a feeling. So, it was a good year for Microsoft. In fact, all the tech companies did fantastic.
I know. They all did great. Yeah. Microsoft had a really good first quarter. Let's see. Net income, $6.6 billion, 84 cents a share, up 12% from last year, $24.5 billion in revenues for their first quarter.
Are they at the point, are they roughly where they were at their heyday when Windows was the dominant platform. They're doing they're doing better, right?
Well, stock-wise, they're doing great.
Well, yeah, the stock was stagnant.
Stock-wise,
for years.
Yeah, they're back to when Yahoo ruled the world, and
yeah,
they. Actually, I was just gonna, as you were reading those numbers, it occurred to me, you know, for a long, long time in my head, I have Microsoft earns a net income of somewhere between $4 and $5 billion a quarter, and $20 to $25 billion in revenues. And what you just said was $6 billion in net income, I think, and I don't recall the revenue figure, but higher. You know, I think, I mean, from just a financial perspective, I don't think this company has ever been this strong.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Unless I'm missing something.
I mean, a big part of the reason they're strong right now is the cloud, as we talk about all the time. You know, in fact, this quarter, they actually hit their own goal of $20 billion annual revenue run rate for what they call commercial cloud. So that's like Azure, Office 365, Dynamics 365, Power BI, all their new cloud-centric services are doing great. They had said they wanted to hit $20 billion sometime in their fiscal 18, so they actually hit it in the first quarter. So they're a little ahead of plan in how the cloud is doing. And, you know, the other thing about cloud is the margins on cloud are really high, right? So, you know, they've got a chart in their earnings deck from this time that said commercial – where is it? Commercial cloud revenues. Okay. They break it out for the first quarter. It was $5 billion for the first quarter. And the gross margin on that, 57%.
So like Apple margins. Then.
Yeah.
So they make hardware.
So they're doing pretty well with the cloud stuff. And, you know, Windows had a strong quarter too, as did Exchange and SQL Server and you know, they just had a strong quarter all the way across. Office 365 especially, they're now at 120 million business users, monthly active users is what they call it, which is up from 100 million in April. So they're still growing that business really strongly. Yeah, they look good.
The thing about that is, too, I tried to do this math with Brad, but we came up a little short. How much per year would you say that Microsoft makes, I guess, revenue-wise, per user in Office 365? Like, in other words, what's the average price of a seat?
So, you know what? That's really hard to say because everybody's on different plans, right?
Right. So in other words, $120 for a small business premium, and then there are the services only ones like kiosk users that are much, you know, less money.
And then there's some like E5, you know, where they're paying way more because they're getting everything, right? But we don't know. We don't have a breakout of what numbers in each of those.
All right, so if you had a guess, $80,
$75. I have no idea. None.
I'm just looking at historic graphs, and they only go back to 2005, unfortunately. But it is the highest net revenue in a quarter since 2005.
Likely to me, yeah.
Very, very good.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it looked pretty strong. The one thing we were kind of bantering about on Twitter was about Surface, right? So their Surface revenues for this quarter were up compared to the year ago quarter. They
What number, Mary Jo?
No, I'm trying to find where I wrote that.
No, you're never going to find that number, right? They won't tell us those things.
Oh, right. You're right. They won't tell us that.
Yeah.
Surface revenues were up $113 million compared to the year-ago quarter, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, one interesting point was they attributed the growth to Surface Laptop. And I had a chance to ask them about that because I said, wait, didn't Surface Pro actually kick in more money for that quarter? And why did you call out Surface Laptop? And they said, it's because it's a new category for us. Oh. First time we ever had a quote, laptop. True laptop.
Yeah. Okay. And words and Surface Pro were too hard to add to that sentence. I mean,
I know.
That's all they had to do.
They said it's because that's our net new contribution to the category. That's why they called it out in the press release.
I'm sorry to interrupt again, but you understand that that's Microsoft earnings in a nutshell right there. They literally just admitted that what they do is cherry pick. That's even though the other product probably delivered more revenue.
Could have.
They chose to focus on that one thing. Seriously, they're like, don't pay attention over here. Oh, no, we're over here now. Don't look over here. Why are you looking over
the
here?
The reason we were talking about this on Twitter, though, is because we were asking, is that growth enough? Is it good enough? You know, because a year ago, they didn't have as many different models of Surface in the market. They didn't have as wide distribution of Surface a year ago. So the question is that a good level of growth, or is that just like, yeah, it's up slightly? You know, it's still a $1 billion business. And again, we don't know how much money they're losing.
12% is terrible when you're measuring a quarter in which you launched two brand new products over a quarter a year ago, when the last time you had a new product was 9 months prior. That's a disaster. It should have been 40%. Like my initial thought when it was like 12%, like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And then you think about it, you have to think about that quarter a year ago. They had nothing.
Yeah. So
that's actually pretty bad.
The question, though, is like we often say, why are they in the hardware business at all? Right. I mean, obviously, it's not to lose money. That's not why. Yeah. But, you know, are they really counting on Surface as being a major contributor to Microsoft's total revenue pie? I don't think they are. You know, I think if it stayed around $1 billion every quarter or year, I forget which one it is now, but I think they would be okay with that.
Yeah, right. So I think it's I think the one thing Satya Nadella probably demands is that it makes sense financially, right? That it makes money. And I think it does make sense financially, right? Are they ever going to be Dell or HP or Lenovo? No. Right. Yeah. But I agree with you. I don't think that's the point. I think if you can do it profitably and be aspirational, right, if you can trigger other companies to sell similar products that sell for less and sell in higher volume, then you've just done something wonderful for this business you're trying to support. So I agree with you. I'm still surprised, though. I really do think that Surface Laptop has legs just from a design standpoint. So many people seem to love it. That it should be their best seller, and I still think kind of will be. I'm surprised that the figure wasn't higher, because like you said, they're launching in more markets now than they used to. Mm-hmm. Availability is much broader. You know, in the old days, meaning before these products, they would release to the US and Canada and Puerto Rico, and then 6 months later they'd add the UK and maybe France, and then they would kind of dribble it out over time. And they're not really doing that anymore. I mean, these things were pretty much broadly available from day one, I think.
Yeah.
It's surprising. It's not higher.
Anyway, as they like to say on the analyst call, great quarter, guys.
Great quarter.
They always start every question. Hi, the analyst. Bob, great from quarter, guys.
Great quarter, by the way. Yeah. It's like, thanks. I'm gonna put your quote up on my refrigerator.
Yeah. So, any other salient points there?
Oh, one other thing we should mention.
Yeah,
this is the last quarter they're going to talk about Windows Phone. They said finally they've topped out. I think on losing money. I think they lost another $300 million this quarter.
Oh, my God. How could you still lose money on it? They've just spread it out, right?
It's So this is it, though. They said, you know what? Now we've finished bleeding that business and we're done. So put that chapter behind us and move on. LinkedIn also strong, $1.1 billion revenue in the quarter. So they say they're ahead of plan with LinkedIn. Yeah.
What is their plan with LinkedIn, by the way?
So their plan with LinkedIn, originally their plan a year ago when the deal closed was to hurry up and integrate a bunch of Microsoft stuff with LinkedIn stuff. And then the plan became, let's continue to grow LinkedIn's existing business as much as we can and integrate some stuff. So I would say my own take, they're a little behind on the integration part of their strategy, but they feel still very strongly that they're growing total number of users, length of sessions on LinkedIn, and all those metrics that people want to see. So that part of the business is building. It's just the combination part we haven't heard and seen that much about.
Hmm. Okay.
So maybe we will soon. That's my guess. I think we're still going to hear from them, maybe even before the end of this year, about some things they're doing with LinkedIn that we haven't heard yet.
Fair enough. Were there any surprise? I mean, cloud is
anything
still
that
big.
We were like, whoa, No, cloud was still big. Office. We talked about business subscriptions at 120 million users, but their consumer subscriptions of Office 365 are now at 28 million. So that business is still pretty strong too. You know, we keep hearing from people, Microsoft's getting out of consumer. They're done with it. They just want to be a business company. Well, here's one part of the business that is still going very strong. They're selling to home users with Office 365, and they seem to be continuing to invest pretty heavily in that and getting good returns on that investment.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah. I wasn't surprised by anything there. I kind of expected them to beat their commercial cloud number this quarter, given how they did last quarter.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I wouldn't say there were any surprises. I mean, they continue to do the same thing. They invent this category called commercial cloud, which is not actually one of their businesses. And then they tell you how much money it didn't make. But if they did make this money over four quarters, it would be this much money. It's like the craziest metric. But,
interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, same as always.
You guys are used to it now. How long does that go on for? The phone calls.
Well, they changed their accounting principle again. We should mention. They always like their style of accounting changes every three quarters, so it makes it impossible to compare. Go back or how things were previously.
Yeah.
The call usually takes at least an hour, and the press aren't allowed to ask questions on the call. We just have to listen to the analyst questions, and a lot of times we're all griping in the background, like, ask them about
the stupid analysts. They don't know what to ask.
Great quarter, guys.
Yeah, great quarter, guys. Guess we're going to make you a buy. Well, it's
need
really
me to spell my name.
It's really true. If you look at the stock graph, I mean, it's soaring.
They're at like 83 bucks.
That was the one thing. I can't blame Steve Ballmer, but one of the weirdisms of his time at Microsoft is that the Microsoft stock price like flatlined
so
the entire time.
Yeah.
The entire time. It was almost like literally the same. Like
25.
Yeah.
I know.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't. I mean, he made the money. His revenues were up over his intention.
Yeah, I know. I can't.
It's just it wasn't an inspiring business, and maybe the market felt, and they were probably right, that the business itself didn't have a huge future. That so it wasn't until they got to the cloud where there was something to get excited about.
Sure.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, I feel like that is what analysts, they all ask questions about the cloud. Like, nobody says, like, what about Windows, you know?
What about Windows? A big part of it, and it's not necessarily what he's doing. It's just that by picking him, Microsoft has indicated we are going to make a big change and we're look to future businesses. And I think now they're starting to pay attention to it because they could have talked up all the same stuff under Steve Ballmer. No, I don't think they would have cared as much.
Right. Right. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Yeah. How did Windows do? I mean, do we care?
They're still, they're still contributing a huge amount to Microsoft's overall finances.
Interesting.
In line with the industry, right? So it's probably like minus 1% overall, which is kind of in line. And
I think they were even a little ahead, right? Weren't they?
Yeah, historically they have been. Yeah, they certainly have been for many quarters.
Ahead of the PC industry?
Yeah.
does that happen? I mean, aren't they... I mean, isn't it directly tied?
Well, PC industry, no one ever looks at revenues for the PC industry, right? So in other words, what we can do is look at unit sales. Unit sales is spread between all kinds of different computer types.
Right.
What's happening is the unit sales are going down, but the average price of Windows is going up because we're skewing more toward premium PCs and gaming PCs.
Ah,
so Microsoft can actually beat the industry by selling more expensive SKUs of Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah.
They still sell Windows, huh?
Imagine that.
I thought they were just cloud stuff.
Who's buying Windows?
You have to run the cloud on something. I guess.
Already over 5% of PCs have the Fall Creators Update.
Yeah. Now, obviously, that measurement was taken about a week after that thing came out. So
it was fast then.
Let's not get too excited, but that's much faster than was the case with the previous version, which Microsoft specifically rolled out more slowly. So I think this supports our contention that they're moving more quickly, and that part of it might be because, again, they tested it on more PC types. And so anecdotally, I can tell you between the different PCs I have here in my home, and there are a lot of them, there's only one I found that didn't get it immediately in an HP.
Yeah, this Lenovo X1 Yoga, second generation, got it right away.
Yep.
That's good.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll come back next month. I think we'll be a little more interesting on that figure.
No news is good news when it comes to Windows
good so
updates.
Far.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Let's move on to Andromeda. What is that?
Gosh. Andromeda is this rumored Microsoft Windows 10 mobile device that we've been kind of hearing bits and pieces about for over a year, right? I mean, I think the first reports of this were over a year ago. And we even on Windows Weekly called this, when we weren't calling it Surface Phone, we were calling it Surface Mobile, right? Like something Microsoft's going to do to try to get back into mobile. It's definitely not going to be a consumer handset, but it's something mobile that has telephony capabilities built into it. And we've kind of mentioned it on and off on Windows Weekly many times over the past year plus. Well, now the rumors on this are heating up again. And, you know, people are pointing to this patent that came out in January from Microsoft, a patent application showing a thing that looked like a foldable device with a hinge. People are calling it Courier 2.0 because of that Courier tablet Microsoft killed. And then when you go back and look at some of their future videos, you see all these images of some kind of a little mobile folding device that this may or may not end up looking like. So people have been writing about this again over the past few weeks saying, you know what, maybe there really is this thing and maybe it's going to be heavy on the digital ink and pen usage and it's going to look like Courier 2 and maybe it's going to be out next year. So we don't have any new real data points about it other than just people saying, I think it's going to be out next year. I think it's going to have a pen, you know, but everybody jumps in and wants to weigh in on what they are reading into it. So, of course, we did, too. Paul and I both did. And
what the heck?
Why not? So I just in my article about this, I said, you know, the part to me that's the most interesting about this is what kind of apps are going to be on this. If this does ever come to market, what's going to be on it that will make it compelling to business users? So I said, of course, if it's a dual screen thing with a pen, you'd assume OneNote or some kind of other maybe more futuristic note-taking app or a derivative of OneNote or something like that. But, you know, there could be other kinds of apps for Microsoft, too, because they've got a lot of things that they've talked about being for frontline workers and productivity workers. So maybe, you know, obviously things like their To-Do app, which is what Wunderlist used to be now called Microsoft To-Do, Staff Hub, which is their staffing management application for people who work in frontline kinds of jobs like customer service. They have things like MileIQ, you know, mileage tracking. They have invoicing apps. So they have a lot of things that could be kind of combined into some kind of a suite on this or at least made available to people using this kind of a device. So I'm just kind of throwing that out there saying they've got pieces that they could pull together to make something interesting if they do ever bring this to market. But I haven't heard anything new about when. All I kept hearing was not this year, maybe next year. And we did talk before about Andromeda OS, and that thing isn't the OS that runs on this thing, just to keep it super confusing. Andromeda OS is just some underpinnings underneath Windows 10 that are going to make it easier for Microsoft and other OEMs to build devices using Windows 10. So you'll be able to pull out different pieces and say, oh, I'm building a phone. I want to use this. I want to use this and this. Kind of more modularized, building on top of one core. That's what Andromeda OS is. So Andromeda OS is not a new OS running on Andromeda hardware. That's not what it is. It's just some underlying stuff that users will probably have no idea about and don't need to know about. But Windows enthusiasts are interested in it.
That's the problem I have is the Windows enthusiasts. The thing is, over the past years now, right, as we've recoiled in horror every time Microsoft kills some beloved consumer product or service that, you know, everybody can't live without. The sheer speed at which we've jumped on this bandwagon and gotten excited about this thing, again, astonishes me. And as I ask these people, why on earth, given the number of times you've been burned by this company, would you get excited about this mythical, probably fake thing that isn't even going to happen? And they tell me the same thing in different words, but basically what it amounts to is something like, it's like riding a bike. You know, it's like they can't, like, it's like they can't stop themselves from getting excited about this stuff. And
Do you not think this will ever come to market? I kind of think something is coming because we keep all hearing about it over and over. But
here's what I would say. The way I would put it is, I think it's either not going to happen or it just will not matter in the slightest. And I think maybe it was Windows Phone, and it might be because I was a little ahead of it on this one. I know a lot of guys are still clutching their Windows Phone in a death grip right now and refusing to give it up or whatever. But a couple years ago when I said, nope, it's this thing's dead. I'm not doing this anymore. Maybe I've just had that time and that separation, but I think that was the line for me. Like, that was the one where I was like, I'm not doing this anymore.
I know.
You know, right. I don't trust this thing.
I think a lot of people are in that boat, right? Like, they're like, yeah, I don't care what they make. I'm not going to buy it. Right.
On Twitter, as recently as, 10 minutes ago on Twitter, a guy I really like is getting all excited about this thing. And it's like, dude, like, you're really wearing this on your sleeve. Like,
yeah.
I feel bad. Look, if this thing happened, it was successful, it's great. I don't mean I wish it ill, and I don't wish these people ill, of course. I feel bad for the number of people I run into who are just getting excited again over something. It's like, guys, seriously, how many times are you going to get hit in the face? Duck. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, my biggest worry for me about Andromeda, if it is a dual screen thing with a pen, I've kind of weaned myself from taking notes with a pen anymore. I've like type all my notes now. So I'm like,
wow.
In concept, I'm intrigued by this, but would I ever use it?
What if you could have notepad on one side of the screen?
Yeah.
And then like a web browser on the other side.
Yeah. Then Maybe. It gets more interesting to me. Maybe. But then how do you type on it?
You need a third screen.
Because if it's 6 inches, right? Say even if it's six inches on both sides, like, okay, so how do you type on it? Like, I'm just puzzled about it. Ideas, thoughts, prayers.
Well, obviously, there would be a virtual keyboard on one or both of the screens.
Right.
It could be split between the screen, and it's like you can kind of imagine the different ways it would work.
But then slow to type, like then it would kind of defeat the purpose, right? I think Microsoft wants people to find reasons to love the pen, and there are already a group of people obviously who need and love the pen, but like they want more of us to use the pen, right?
That must explain why they are no longer bundling it with any of their products. I don't know.
You know, there was a rumor the next Note, the Note 9, would be a foldable device, and apparently they decided not to. They backed
decided
off.
Not to?
Yes, they backed off.
Oh.
So there's another company, though, that I think is going to release a dual
screen
device pretty soon, right? I think.
Yeah, I thought so.
But that's dopey. That is,
it's not like this Microsoft thing. No, this
that's
is
a Samsung patent, right?
So Samsung like has a foldable screen. This is just two phones with a hinge.
No.
That's really dopey. I can't remember. It's Acer or Asus. It's one of the known suspects.
Yeah, right.
One of the usual suspects. But it's a dopey idea.
Yeah.
I thought this was the Andromeda. Well, it's silly to ask what it would be because
we don't know.
It's made up and it's probably not even real.
Oh, Chris Wolfel says was a ZTE that you're thinking of.
Yeah.
The dual screen thing.
That's what I was thinking of. I could be wrong though. I don't know.
Yeah. But it's not a foldable screen. It's just two screens on a hinge.
Yeah,
which I don't get. That doesn't
We're gonna get foldable screens. We're gonna get, you know, that's going to happen, right? It'll be like the science fiction movie where they're holding up a thing that looks like a newspaper, but it's just one piece of paper.
Well, that technology exists. I mean, it's not. I don't know how robust it is, how durable it is.
Someday, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this is just the courier, isn't it, really, this Andromeda? It's just the courier.
It kind of looks...
It just won't die.
That's part of the problem. It's like these guys are holding out hope, you know, like, oh, it's going to be, they're going to get it right. They're going to do it.
But then you saw the patent does look like the courier, right? And it's a new patent application. And the patent for the hinge is from the same guy who patented the hinge for Surface Studio. So there's like, there's reasons people are trying to believe, right? Or hoping on. Right. But,
well, if it can run PWAs, I'll look at it. But.
Okay, good. What if it runs Linux, though?
So this is the ZTE phone.
Okay.
It's two phones.
Sure.
I mean, it is. I mean, it's two screens in the sense that it's an extensible desktop, right? So.
Yep.
But it's, I don't, I mean, who wants to carry that?
I know. And why? Okay, there's two, but like, why?
It's their Axon M.
Yeah.
They, ZTE calls it the must-have device of the year.
Yeah, well, they would.
All right.
Anyway, moving right along.
Did we not mention the Surface Pro news? Is that not in the notes?
No, it is in the notes.
Yeah, it's the next item. It's right. Yes. It's next.
Oh, it was.
Because we were saying, Andromeda is like this pie in the sky. We don't know if it even exists. But there are real things happening, right?
Yeah, that's right.
This is a business version of the Surface Pro with an LTE radio in it. Is it an eSIM? Are they using the eSIM yet?
It is, but it also has a nano SIM, so you can do either one. And the question I kind of ask is the fact that there is an eSIM in it, does that mean that this is an always connected PC?
Oh.
Right. Hmm.
Does it count?
I think so. I think that's the only qualification, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. No, because it could be Intel or ARM based. It doesn't have to be one or the other, right? Yep.
I believe this is the first. I could be wrong, but I think it's the first Windows PC to ship with an eSIM. First I know of, anyway, and I think that's what it is.
Huh. Yeah. But the interesting, this is so weird. Microsoft talked about this whole thing at Ignite in a session that Rich Wood went to from Neowen. Remember, we had him on as a guest from Ignite when we did the show.
I think Leah wasn't
there. So Rich Woods went into the session and he got everything. He got the date. He got like the specs. He got the whole thing. He wrote it up, and then they reannounced that this week at Future Decoded.
And then he disappeared.
Then Rich Woods just disappeared. No, he didn't disappear. But so it's that exact device that they talked about at Ignite in a single session. It's something they already promised back in May, right, when they introduced the original Surface Pro. But this is what Panos Panay did this week. You know, where he kept speculating, what's he doing in London? What's he going to say? This is what he announced.
So at approximately 11 something at night, the night before this, I was probably up because of a baseball game. Because again, I've lost all kinds of sleep. This stupid World Series.
It's not stupid. But it's great.
Right, sorry. It is. I'm watching it. Yeah. So got an email from Microsoft PR. Would you like to hear about the news tomorrow? Will you respect the NDA? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, sure. So they sent me the press release or the blog post that was going to go up live as Panos Panay was taking the stage. And it was going to go live at 6 a.m. our time. And I read it and I was like, oh, are you kidding me? I'm like, I'm going to bed. I'm not going to write this. So I got up at 6 to write this.
Oh, wow.
I opened my laptop. I went to the live stream and I watched Panos Panay, who at the time was talking about Surface Hub, speaking on stage at Future Decoded. And I'm like, okay, eventually he's going to get to the news. If you did not count the promo video, which is the same promo video they showed in May or whenever they launched this product for the first time. Mm. He talked about Surface Pro for about a minute and 28 seconds. It was the shortest.
That was it? Wow.
Yep. And then he goes, I'd like to talk some about Surface Book 2. And I was like, I woke up to watch this. Like, it was just nothing.
Dag nabbit.
Maybe because, lately when they're introducing new Surface products like they did with us when they talked about Surface Book 2, they don't talk about the stuff that we care about, like specs and pricing and availability when they announce it.
They didn't talk about anything. In fact, their documentation, you had to go and look at the footnotes and stuff to really figure out what's going on. And then they finally released a video.
Yeah.
You know, for example, the eSIM versus NanoSIM thing that Leo asked about. That was mentioned in a video that went out on YouTube, you know, 2 hours later or something.
Yeah. I know they want to get away from doing speeds and feeds, but I think you need to do some of them when you announce a new device.
Or at least just provide a place so you can look at it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, for example, he never said, like, as it turns out, I believe there is one version of Surface Pro. It's called Surface Pro with advanced LTE. It's a Core i5. It's got some amount of memory, some amount of storage. It's got this capability inside of it. That's it.
Yeah.
It's just one model. Yeah. Where are they going to sell it? I don't know. Where are they going to sell it at different times? I have no idea. How much does it cost? No, nothing. They didn't provide any of the pertinent information that one might need, you know, to understand this product. I thought it was really strange.
Yeah. But the one thing that they also didn't say at Ignite, but they did say this time somewhere, was the first people who are going to get this device, the Surface Pro LTE Advanced, I think the official name is, our business customers, right? And then consumers can't even get it until next year, right? Like they're going to not allow you to buy it.
They weren't very explicit, but I believe you're correct, right? I think the way they said it was that business customers will be able to start, you know, getting it in December. I think it's going to be pretty limited in December. It's going to be something that expands over the course of next year, but I can only speculate because, again, they didn't actually say this. But yeah, I think back in May, whenever they announced it, they said by the end of the year we're going to have this thing, and so they're kind of skating in under the schedule there. But is it just going to be on Surface.com? Is there something preventing an individual from buying this if they want it? No idea.
Yeah.
No idea.
All right. Yeah. Outlook.com. Oh, no, HoloLens.
worth a mention. They also did announce at Future Decoded today that as of December 1, HoloLens is going to be available in 29 more countries, all of which are in Europe. So now the total number of countries that HoloLens will be in is 39 because there are already 10.
Also, the total number of HoloLenses on the world will be 39.
Yeah, it was interesting because I didn't actually watch the event live today, but I saw a lot of write-ups and blog posts about it. And they're really pushing the idea of HoloLens as being well-suited for what they call first-line workers, which are the name for the customer service reps and people who are out in the field. And I think HoloLens works in a limited way for that group of people. I mean, it's expensive, you know. It's like everybody at Burger King's not going to be wearing a HoloLens, right? I mean, no.
God, I hope not. That would be really horrible.
They already have visors.
But they really were like, this is an ideal device for first-line workers. I'm like, well, maybe a limited set of your first-line workers.
On the factory line or, not at Burger King.
Maybe even on the phone, you know, where you have to look something up or whatever. Maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know. They really were pushing, though, the whole business appeal of this and kept talking first line.
They'd sell these development kits to these to be in a production environment, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if I had to guess on the – was it front line or first line? Front line?
First – are they calling first it first line? Yeah, they used to call it front line. Now they call it first line.
Okay, first line. I'm going to guess and say that, remember at the Surface Book event, he was talking about Office integration and how these things are all designed together, you know, Windows, Office, Surface. Microsoft 365, there's some news around that. Part of that news has to do with these types of workers. I think they're pushing this notion now, and I'm sure what they're doing is looking across their entire portfolio and saying, how can each of the things we do reflect that thing, that push that we have for these types of workers? And I think that explains the HoloLens thing, but I don't feel that HoloLens is a particularly good solution for this type of market, and that it can be very successful in certain vertical markets. You know, that automaker thing they did with Ford, I thought was very interesting. Obviously some scientific things, very interesting, but yeah, the notion of first line, front line workers, whatever they're called, using this is specious, perhaps. I don't know.
I think aspirational. How's that?
That's a better word. But, you know, when we saw the Ford, when we went years ago to the Ford design facility, they were using VR and helmets to see what they were working on. Oh, yeah. So I could see an AR solution.
A 3D object. Yeah. You don't want to commit it to a material because it's time consuming and expensive.
Exactly. Right. And you can see what it's like to sit in the front seat.
It makes tons of sense.
They let us do that. We sat down. We sat in the front seat and looked at the console.
You can see if there's a dead spot in the back when you're looking over your shoulder or whatever.
Before Oculus Rift. This was.
That's cool.
So if that's frontline. That's a frontline use.
That's not frontline though, right? I mean, that's the exact opposite of frontline.
Yeah, that's specialist.
Backline. You
know, specialist. Yeah. I can't see them. For instance, then we went down to the assembly line for the F-150 trucks, and you really don't want workers wearing anything to obscure their vision. Mm. They kind of need to know this thing's moving.
Yeah.
And they need to see what's going on. I guess, you could wear a HoloLens because at least you can sort of see what's going on, and it could alert you. Yep. Hey, watch out because here comes something.
Yep.
I see it more for training.
Yeah.
Yep. Certainly for that environment. Once you're trained, you don't want that. You want to just do your job.
Mm. Is there a killer app for this kind of thing?
Inventory. I'll tell you, the pick and pull at Amazon. So you're an Amazon picker.
Yep.
And your job is to go up and down those aisles and fulfill an order. And so seeing the order on your screen and then the HoloLens saying it's right there. Mm. So you just go right to it. You pull it. I mean, I can visualize how great that would be if you're a picker. I'd hate that job. Yeah. But if you're a picker, you just.
They did do that. You mentioned training, and this kind of falls into that category. But one of the really effective HoloLens demos was the one where over Skype, someone explained to you how to work on an electrical outlet in your house, right?
Yeah, or plumber. And, Yeah.
Yeah, anything like that. I thought that was actually really cool.
Elevator repair is the other one they show. Like a guy, who goes to the World Trade Building and is like, hey, this elevator's broken, but I don't know how. I've never repaired this one before.
I'm going to do this virtually.
So
anyway, so there are uses, and I think the existing HoloLens could be used in a picking environment.
Yeah.
Where we just, the problem is it's not the whole field of view. So what you really want is the whole field of view and a red arrow that says, there's your thing, or go down this aisle like that.
Yep.
Instead.
Yeah, you don't have to remember where it was. You literally just want to get as efficiently from here to there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. No, that makes sense.
Although by that time that comes around, they'll just have robots do it.
Yeah, right.
Right. I was thinking the same thing on the assembly line, too.
Yeah, actually, almost everything is going to be done by robots. And anything like that, if you can program a HoloLens, might as well just get a robot.
Exactly.
Have a robot.
We got this robotic thing in your head that can tell you exactly where to go. Oh, wait.
Yeah. So, Outlook.com.
So, Outlook.com, right? Can I have the bad news part of this?
Yes.
You obviously have the bad news.
So should Mary Jo start with the good news, or do you want to?
Yeah. Let's do good news first.
All right. Mary Jo, the good news.
Great. So Microsoft announced that if you have an Office 365 home or personal subscription, so if you're a consumer who subscribes to Office 365, they're going to be bringing some premium features to Outlook.com for you for free. So there's going to be some things about anti-phishing capabilities that it'll automatically scan attachments for potential malware. You're no longer going to have ads. Da-dum! No banner ads, no ads in the message list. If you, again, are both an Office 365 home or personal subscriber and you have Outlook.com. And what else did they say? They're upping some Outlook.com storage limits for your mailboxes. So yeah, I feel there's some nice little benefits for you if you're in that category of users. Paul?
And now the bad news.
So they added some Outlook.com premium features to Office 365, as she described. Although as Microsoft calls them, they call them premium Outlook.com features. It's almost like they didn't want to use the term Outlook.com premium because, by the way, they just killed it.
That's the one you and I were trying to get?
Yeah. So a couple of things to this.
At least I don't have to check to see if I have it anymore.
Some buts. I'll get to the buts. But
okay.
they didn't. There are two main features that are not coming along, you know, to Office 365. One is simpler integration between the calendars and inboxes of the various family accounts or whatever. The other one, of course, is the custom domain support, which is the big one, which is disappointing. Now, they do say in a support document that they will continue supporting that functionality for the people who are already subscribers. And that's neat for the people who already subscribe. But, I mean, they really just kind of shut the whole thing down. So it's kind of a little, you know, community. And to be fair to Microsoft, you know, they did custom domains for Windows Live many years ago. And I believe they still support that stuff, which is sort of astonishing. If you still have it, you just can't get a new one. They did say, however, that they were going to, if you think about custom domains and Outlook.com premium, there were two sides to it. One is supporting those aliases in Outlook.com as email addresses, as aliases to your Microsoft account. So, for example, I own the domain Therat.net, and so I could say, well, I want Paul@Therat.net to be an alias for Hotmail in my Therat@Hotmail.com account or whatever. Microsoft handles that part of it, right, because that's their back end. But the other half of domain management is the registrar part of it. You know, you have to pay a fee every year to keep the domain. Microsoft's going to stop doing that. And so they haven't said yet how this is going to work, but they're basically going to work with some domain registrar to transfer that to them. So starting at some point in the future, you'll have to pay Namecheap or one of the other company, whoever they choose, instead of Microsoft, if you want to keep that domain active, right? So there's two pieces to that puzzle. I think over time they're going to get rid of this. Why would they support this one feature for a small group of their users? It seems like over time they're going to get rid of it. So it's, but they haven't said that.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's disappointing that they canceled the service.
It's you know, a lot of people, when they saw this announcement, they said, oh, so wait, I already have an Outlook.com premium subscription. So what happens to me? And, you know, they say there you can renew it. I don't know how long you're going to be able to renew it for.
That's the worry. Yep.
Yeah. But you can renew it.
I don't remember the pricing, but there was some weird thing with the pricing on this where it was supposed to be fairly, you know, like a reasonable, like
$40 or $60.
Yeah. And then they had this thing, well, if you do it now, it's going to be like $9.99. And then you can renew at that price too. And it was like, wait a minute, what? Like, you're going to have a sale on it this year and you're already telling me it's going to be on sale next year. They obviously, one of the things that kind of happened on the back of this is over the course of this year, they were testing different ways of delivering these services. Some people in Office 365 got this offer early, and they were Microsoft told me at the time they were kind of test marketing it. And I think what they determined was the same thing they determined last time they did custom domains. It's kind of hard to do, probably within the context.
You probably don't make a lot of money doing it.
Right? Yeah, it's probably it's like low volume, high work. Yeah. You know, it just didn't make sense for them. So it's just kind of it's disappointing because I like it. I mean, I like using the custom domain on the Microsoft account. It's cool.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
But as an Office 365 home user, I still have my premium version of Outlook Mail, Outlook.com.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you paid for Outlook.com premium as well, yes, you can use those together still.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah. If you didn't, you will now get the ad-free inbox.
I'm not seeing any ads now. Yeah. Okay.
Cool. That's something I've argued for years. It should have been part of Office 365. You send them $99 a year for home or $69 for personal. Why would you be seeing ads in the inbox? That doesn't make any sense.
You know what's weird? So if you're an Office 365 business subscriber and you also have Outlook.com, this doesn't apply to you.
Yeah, that's really weird.
Right, because those are two separate accounts.
Right, so that's me. Like, I have an Office 365 small business account, and then I have Outlook.com. So I still see ads in my Outlook.com.
All right, we're going to go down a rabbit hole. So let me
get the gong ready.
It's a little complex. Let me try to get through this. Let's say you have an Office 365 commercial account. You're saying that you do. Okay.
Yep.
And that account is Mary Jo at something, doesn't matter what it is. Yeah. All right. So that thing by default is not a Microsoft account. It's an Office 365 business account. That's all it is.
Yeah. Right.
Now, you could over on the side have a Microsoft account that could be like MaryJo@Hotmail.com or whatever it is. Those two things are two completely separate accounts, right?
Yep. Right.
Okay. You could also do a really screwy thing where you sign into Hotmail.com or whatever with your Office 365 commercial account and say, I want to turn this into a Microsoft account. Now, you can do that. Mm-hmm. When you do, I know, like I said, it's a rabbit hole. But if you do that, you can't get email services or calendar or any of the other stuff through Outlook.com because you already have a work account that provides that stuff, right?
Yeah, right.
Now, tied to that is this notion that that business account doesn't have to be hosted by Microsoft. This could be a G Suite account. It could be any work account. It doesn't matter. You could work, you know, Mary Jo at Acme.com. It could be hosted on some Lotus thing or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. They're not going to give you email on that account. Yeah. You can only get email on a Microsoft account that has a Hotmail.com, Outlook.com, Live.com, blah, 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 whatever, right? Okay.
Yep.
So just so I understand what you were asking before.
Yep. That is what I was asking.
You either have two separate accounts where you are getting email through Outlook.com, in which case they're two separate accounts, so it doesn't apply.
Yep.
Doesn't matter that you're paying Microsoft over here for something else.
Yep.
Or you have one account that is both a Microsoft account and a work account, in which case you're not getting email through Outlook.com anyway. So it is one account, but you're not seeing ads because you're using Outlook on the web.
Yeah, I have two separate accounts.
Now, everybody who did not understand what I just said, raise your hand.
Just ignore it.
I'm sorry. This is how I spend my life.
Just write it up. And
Never mind.
I'm going to call it the Microsoft Outlook Field Guide. Chapter one.
There you go.
It's confusing.
You know, you don't need a groove music field guide anymore, so you need something else to do. So why
That's
not?
True. That's true. This is all I think. This kind of thing. That's my brain right there in a
Can
nutshell.
Can we just talk about the Xbox and get it over with?
Yes. Dear God, thank
you. Wait, one more thing.
Oh, wait,
gosh darn it.
Really quick, and then you guys can have your fun, and I'll go make some cat treats or something.
Okay, I'm going to start a countdown timer, and you can watch that. And,
nice.
Okay, no, I'm just kidding. This is the Razer phone announcement, actually.
Oh, boy.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, so Office 365 Business Premium. If you're a subscriber to that, which is the highest-end small and mid-sized business plan for Office 365, costs you like $15 per month to be part of that, you just got a whole bunch of new free apps. Yay.
Woo!
you now got added to your subscription Microsoft Connections, which is an email marketing service, Listings, which is a way to publish business information, Invoicing, an invoice creation service. You've already got Mile IQ, which is a mileage tracking thing, Staff Hub, which is for first line customer service workers, and a new Outlook Customer Manager app that works inside of Outlook. All of those just got added to your subscription or already have, some of those may have been added, but all of those now are part of Office 365 Business Premium, and you don't have to pay anything extra beyond what you already pay for a subscription. And if you're one of those weird people who already have Microsoft 365 Business, right, which is Windows 10 plus Office 365 plus Enterprise Mobility plus Security, and that means you have, by nature of the of that plan, Office 365 Business Premium. You get all those same things too. And as of today, Microsoft 365 Business is now generally available worldwide. Before, it was in preview. So there, boom, done.
Yep. That product is $20 a month. Pre-user. And I must have known this when they announced it. I forgot this. But I guess the way they view the difference between Microsoft 365 Business and Enterprise is that business, not just the size of the business, but it's also an, what they call an unmanaged business, meaning you don't have an Active Directory domain.
Oh, really? Hmm.
Yeah.
Did I know that? I didn't know that.
I saw that today. I was like, I'm not sure I knew that.
That's kind I don't of think I knew that either. Hmm. Yeah. Okay. Okay, now you can have your fun with that.
So, Mary Jo, I'll take you off camera. You can.
Well, hold on. I Mary Jo has a segment she's going to do on PUBG later.
I said to Paul today, I'm putting the notes together. I'm like, I have no idea what this even means. There's something about PUBG. I don't know. Does it mean
Mary Jo's PUBG tip of the week?
Hey, where's the cat?
Man, so before the show started, I got every cat toy out. I ran him around the house for like 35 minutes.
Oh, smart.
I fed him.
That is smart.
And he's still asleep, but let's see.
You wore Sriracha out.
You don't wake a sleeping cat.
No.
You don't.
No. or sleeping in it, baby or cat, either one. Okay, good. Good. He's been very, you know, calm.
I know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice. All right, so. Sriracha needs his own Xbox is what he needs.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
So last week, Leo, you asked me if I had an Xbox One X.
Yes, and you just...
And I don't know what kind of cagey response I gave to that.
They were very cagey. However...
I do.
You do? Yes, I know it. I'm so excited. By the way, I took your advice, and I downloaded the 4K content for Assassin's Creed Origins. I decided on that one. And
that's a good-looking game, I'm told. So I guess we'll have to wait till next week to find out.
I have it on an external hard drive now, so I will just be – and I didn't know this, but you can save your settings out to the external hard drive. So I
did
that.
That's right. That's brand new, by the way. Yes.
Yeah, so now I can – I presume when I get my One X, I can plug it in, plug in that external hard drive, restore settings, and I'll be able to play Assassin's Creed Origin immediately.
Immediately. That's exactly right. That was the entire point of the tip. That's
love
exactly it.
Thank you for that tip. That's fantastic.
Because I mean, that game is all the games are humongous. You know, like Forza 7 is like 95 gigabytes.
Yeah, yeah. I put a 2 terabyte drive on there, figuring I'm going to use it.
Toy home, and you can't even use it. You
know? I have an internal terabyte, so now I'll have 3 terabytes. That should be, I hope, enough for a year's worth.
Yeah, of I don't know the exact math, but if you think about the average size of an Xbox game, it's probably in the 40 something gig range. Right. I mean, you can fit 10 to 18 games on in a terabyte.
Yeah,
so
easy.
Depending on the games, you know. So I put up some Xbox One unboxing shots last Friday. I don't believe I'm violating any terms of agreement by saying that I can write my first impressions this Friday. So I think the console comes out, what, Tuesday next week? So next week we we can talk about what we see.
So on the bottom is the One S. On the top is the One X, the new one.
Yeah, so what they've done here is, A, obviously the console looks a lot like the previous console, which is great. The style is nice. The thing I thought that was really cool, if you look at the back of that thing, those aren't just the same ports. They're in exactly the same order, you know?
Oh, so I can – that's good because I'll just slide it on top and I'll transfer the cables over.
Exactly. Yeah, it works fine.
That's nice, Mike. It's little things like that. I like it.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I can't. I'm not allowed to talk about the software experience or using it or games or anything like that yet. I can only talk about
the
hardware.
But you can show the back panel. So that's good.
Yeah.
So you've got HDMI in and out. They're still going to do the pass-through, apparently.
That's right.
You've got two USB 3 Type-A connectors. You've got in-out, which is in-out on your other one. I don't know what. Oh, IR out. I'm sorry. That's an IR blaster port. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, no, IR. I'm sorry.
IR out. IR. Yeah, infrared out, IR blaster. And then a SPDIF optical audio port and Ethernet jack.
Yep.
And so that's exactly. There's nothing new. I don't see a Kensington lock port on that anymore, but that's not.
I think it's there. I think it's just in a different
You need
location.
It for your dorm room, I guess. Cause
You're going to need it for this one. It's $500. You don't want this one walking up.
Yeah. Okay. Sliding down. This is the unboxing experience you can look forward to. So you think you got the retail packaging, even though you're getting a...
I did get the retail packaging, although you can't really see it in that above picture, but that's it right there. Yeah, so that's the retail packaging.
Yeah,
they actually provided like a little thing over it that had some game...
Right,
cards and you know things, so we could get going on it.
I like the, I love it that it's going to be a UHD 4K, HDR10, not Dolby Vision. Although, perhaps in a software update, Dolby Vision. Well, you can't talk. Never mind. Forget I said anything.
Perhaps Leo. Perhaps.
Perhaps. He's just have. You could just tug your ear if I'm right. Where's the giant power
brick? It does not exist. Like the Xbox One S, you just can cord it. It's inside.
Love it.
It's amazing how small it is.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Given that you've got a brick in there as well as everything else. Controller
one thing
looks
I will
the
say,
same.
Yeah, the controller is literally identical. This is maybe the one down note. This is a $500 console. Like this thing to me, I've been using
Elite
controller.
Put an Elite in there. Come on.
Yeah, that the default controller is cheap. You know, it just feels plastic. Well, it's plastic. It is, you know, feels like it. It's just cheap. So that's a little disappointing. Yeah. But
it is a little disappointing.
I appreciate the consistency. I mean, it's an Xbox.
My son took my Elite controller. I wanted another one.
Mine is destroyed. It's fallen apart. I need. I want them to rev it so I can get a new one.
Yeah. Orange X on the front there.
No, that's just a reflection. It's silver. And this thing also stands on its side without you having to use a stand or whatever.
Don't need
this
stand anymore. Okay. That looks kind of orange.
I think it's just the table reflecting on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
USB port is on the right.
Yep. And that's the controller connect button there.
Is that what that is? Controller connect. Okay. That's the. Looks like it's a wedge. It's like maybe that's just because of the angle, but it looks like it's wedge shaped. It's not a square.
Yeah, it's not. It's a standard kind of pizza box.
Okay. Boy, you really got the detail right in there on that. There's the infrared port. And what is this button?
That's covering before you can put a disc in. I think it's like a little warning label. You just peel it off.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is
this the eject for the disc, that button?
It must be.
Below that, yeah.
I have never put a disc in it, and if life goes accordingly, I never will.
Oh, no. You want to get an H. No. Do yourself
a
favor.
Oh, no, that's true.
One Blu-ray movie. Yeah, not a game disc.
I have a selection. I have about a half dozen, for this reason.
Mad Max, Fury Road. Yeah.
Well, I've already done. See, I've done this on the Xbox One S, so I've kind of.
Right.
That's not changing.
I am looking forward to
it. By the way, Mad Max is one of them. That's true.
Blade Runner 2049, Revenants when that comes out, will be the one to get, I think. Because that's a UHD encoded, but it's also got HDR. And this does HDR, and that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Mary Jo?
Right.
Still with us?
Guys, I'm just scanning beer menus while you're chatting
enjoy
away.
Enjoy the beer. Yeah. There's the standing on its side way to do it. Mm-hmm. Would you recommend, we used to, way back when you had a PC, we'd say format the disc in the orientation it's going to end up in. You probably don't have to do that anymore.
No, it's. Well, I did. I never.
You never did that.
Considered that. No, that's funny.
Yeah, that was when gravity meant something.
Oh yeah.
Okay, it looks nice. It's a little bigger, right, than the S, but
It might be a. It's a little taller.
Taller.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
but not much. If you have it, it should fit in any hole you put the S in.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Nice. All right. See, well, it's hard to tell because you.
Yeah, I think it is a little taller.
Okay. Yeah, not much. They're pretty close.
Yeah, it's surprising.
Yeah. It's pretty.
I think the footprint is a little smaller, but I think it might be. Well, I don't know. Looking at that, it doesn't look taller, does it?
Yeah, it looks identical, frankly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's close.
This is good. It's that overhang that's deceptive.
Yeah, that's where the 4K is.
Right there.
It's right in that bump.
Mary Jo, can you see how obsessive we are?
You're
looking at pictures.
Guys, this is like me. This is like me on Untapped.
Yeah. We're looking at pictures. Like, so there's the unboxing experience, ladies and gentlemen. And your first review embargo lifts Friday. It won't be just you. I'm sure there'll be others reviewing.
That's going to be half the plan. Yeah.
I bet Brad Sams will review it.
Don't be insulting.
He does not have one.
There he is, in fact.
Oh, they surprised me. No, I have a review. Yeah, definitely have a review.
I don't know what Brad is wearing.
I think Brad forgot that Halloween is for children.
I'm a scary blue bear. I'm a scary blue bear. So, thank you, Alex. Alex Gumbel. Once again.
Leo, whatever you're paying Alex, it's too much.
I think Brad is paying Alex, myself.
I love that. And now he comes in, by the way, from the side.
Yeah, no, it's nice. It's a nice little slide there.
If you're not watching the video, you're missing all the fun. So, including those Xbox One on picture. So, and then if you got day and date, which I think you still can. I mean, right?
Yeah.
It's not like a iPhone 10 or something.
Well, they are. You know, they have cautions, but maybe they would do that, right? So, I think you're going to be able to get it.
Yeah, I ordered it, and I think it's still day and date. I ordered it. Remember,
I don't think if you went to the Microsoft website, it would say January.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, boy, these are in short supply.
Mm-hmm. We're going to keep making them as fast as we can.
And, of course, Apple's calling that X10. Microsoft calls it an X.
I know. It's beautiful.
I want to call it the Xbox One 10.
You can if you want.
Which is the Xbox 11.
The 11. The 110. All right. What is PUBG?
All right. PUBG. Yeah.
What PUBG is PUBG?
What's PUBG?
Player Unknown's Battlegrounds. It's arguably the kind of the hot PC game of the year. It is in a weird state because it's kind of, it's basically unfinished. They're kind of, they've released it, you pay for it, and you're kind of testing it, and they're improving it all the time. It's a shooter. It only has one game type. It's a huge world. You parachute down to an island. You land as like a town and rivers and things, and you get down in there, and then you fight. And if you die, you lost the game. It's over. You don't ever come back. It's a very strange kind of thing. But it's huge. My son plays this game, loves it. Brad plays it, loves it, and it's coming to the Xbox One as a console exclusive or launch exclusive. I think it will eventually go to other consoles.
Was this an indie game, or was it a crowdfunded game originally?
Yeah, I think the PlayerUnknown is like a new company, but I think this guy's like a famous game designer, and it was kind of like this.
Ooh, has a little Fallout-y kind of feel to it.
Yeah, it's kind of a it's a shooter. Anyway, it is coming to the Xbox One, so now we know the date.
Oh, is this the one? Oh, this is the one that you get killed. It's like Hunger Games.
That's right.
Yeah. So, oh, I've been wanting to play this. Yeah.
You could wander around in this thing for 15 minutes, do absolutely nothing, and then be shot in the back of the head, and the game's over. Like, sniped. To me, it's a little much, but...
No, this is the one I want. Oh, I'm glad it's going to come out on the... Can I order it now, or do I have to wait?
That's a good question.
Is it HDR?
I do not know. This is the thing. They were the details of this game are really strange. They didn't provide any. And at the event they explained this at, the microphone didn't work. No one could understand what they were talking about. And it's going to be a little different on the Xbox than it is on the PC.
This guy's the Banksy of video games is what's going on.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's, the whole thing is a little strange to me. So I'm going to get it. I have to. But
And apparently, you know, it's like Cuphead. You die immediately, but you get better each time. And you start to
figure
out.
But it almost
out.
Doesn't matter because if you land in the wrong place.
It's a new, it's a new.
Yeah, it's very strange.
New map.
Anyway,
oh,
it
I'm
is
excited.
Coming.
Oh, good.
The other thing is they're, right now they're testing this with the insiders on the Alpha Ring is game gifting, which is a beautiful idea, right? So instead of buying someone a $60 gift card or whatever the figure might be, you buy them literally the exact game digitally. And so they probably enter a code or whatever and they can just get it on their console. So,
oh, this is good because I keep having to give Michael money.
Yeah, we know he wants that game. Give him the game, you know. So that's neat. That's coming soon to everybody, but it's on the Insider program right now. And then, just as a side note, you know, Microsoft will never give us Xbox One sales numbers, but Sony talks about their numbers all the time because their numbers are awesome. And as of this last quarter, they have sold almost 60 million PlayStation 4s. I think the exact figure was 67.5. And those are sold to consumers. Those aren't sitting on shelves somewhere. Those are actual sell-through numbers. I think by the end of this current quarter, they expect to be somewhere north of 80 million. That's roughly the number of consoles they sold entirely for the previous generation. So they're actually doing really, really well. But we don't know what to compare that to because Microsoft won't tell us. Microsoft has sold probably 6 or 7 consoles of some kind. I don't know. It's unclear how many they've sold.
So we're learning now about the Razer Synapse One phone. Just I don't mean to interrupt. They're streaming this on Twitch. But I'll keep an eye on this.
Not on Mixer?
So not on Mixer. No.
To reset up their setups each time when they travel, when they go for an eSports.
It sounds like I don't know what's going on. Anyway, I'm just for the gamers, you go watch that, and I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
By the way, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is on Steam, but the PC version is not feature equivalent to the Xbox version, according to Paul.
That's right. Yeah, but I guess they're going to get it there over time.
Yeah. And version 1 will be available December 12th on Steam and Xbox One X.
Yep.
Nice. Oh, the Razer Synapse 3 has hybrid onboard and cloud memory. Very exciting. Cloud memory. It's a progressive web memory.
It's so progressive, it could remember things from the past.
Oh, I like it. It's Minority Report.
Yep.
PlayStation sales. Let's just skip that. We don't care.
Yep.
Who cares? Who cares? Who cares? We know you're better, okay? We don't care.
Oh, we do care, but... It hurts.
It hurts. It hurts, but we don't want to talk about
show
it.
Show us where the Sony hurt you.
Yeah, Sony, you're hurting us. You're hurting
right here
me.
In my heart.
I got a little doll here.
Right there. Right in the middle.
So they're still talking about other Razer products. I guess the phone's not yet. So let me talk about a great product for people who want to afford the new Razer phone. Because this stuff don't come cheap. Actually, you really should be saving for more important things. That first home or your college education or perhaps retirement. If you're investing, I want to tell you about a better way to do it. It's Betterment. They're the largest independent online financial advisor, and they're an advisor designed for people like me. I'm not allowed, thanks to the fine Securities and Exchange Commission, to be a Betterment subscriber because I do ads for them. You can't do customer endorsements are not allowed in the financial services industry. But I can tell you, I tell everybody I know, including family members, this is the way to go. And if you're young, start now. You know, my daughter is 25, and I said, if you start putting even like $100 a week away or a month, by the time you're my age, you'll have a really significant nest egg. But the key is to take advanced investment strategies that perhaps are not something you're familiar with and take advantage of them thanks to the help from Betterment. Based at 270,000 customers now. Based on the information you share, Betterment will make tailored recommendations on decisions like how much to invest, how much risk to take on your portfolio, the type of account you should have. She was thrilled when I told her about Betterment's socially responsible investing portfolio, which produces great returns, but it makes you feel good because you're investing in companies that meet certain social, environmental, and governance benchmarks, the kind that you would want them to meet. You'll know exactly what your net worth is because the Betterment app, which is fantastic, iOS and Android, will include your other accounts if you wish, bank accounts and other investments, to give you a clear view of your net worth. But the thing I really love about Betterment is the advisory fees. Now, first of all, let me say that Betterment advisors are fiduciaries. They work for you. They're certified financial planners who do not work on commission. They do not have funds of their own. They're not selling you a stock because they have a stake in it. They're working for you. So that's step one. They also work for you for cheap, which is important to me. 0.25% annual fee. Now, with that, you don't get to talk to them on the phone. I don't want to talk to them on the phone. I don't want phone calls. I'm going to be able to have unlimited text messaging access. Actually, I don't know if you should call it text messaging. It's through the app to their team of licensed financial experts. It's in the mobile app's messaging feature. So that means you can talk to your advisor anytime you want, get the best advice you can get, but you do it for practically nothing. 0.25% annual fee. You just compare it to the other guys. Any question? Am I saving enough? What about this stock? Anything? Here's one that a lot of people want to know. Should I pay off my debt or should I invest that money? Which is a better return for me? They can help you with that kind of thing. If you do want phone access and unlimited, that's 0.4%. Betterment is a fiduciary. They don't get commissions. They work for you, and that's what you want. And, of course, the Betterment app is super secure, two-factor authentication, data encryption, in transit and in place. They keep your money. They keep your data secure. Now, I have to tell you, investing involves risk. It's not a guaranteed return, but it's the best advice to give you the best results. For a free 5-minute investment review, costs you nothing. There's no requirement. You can assess your current investment accounts, your tax strategies, how much you're paying in fees, what your risk exposure is. Go to betterment.com/windows, betterment.com/windows, and you could start your free review. No obligation. Highly recommend you at least do this and get going on that. Betterment.com/windows. Rethink what you and your money can do with Betterment. I really admire what they've done here. It's a really great solution. As I said, I tell my family to use it. All right, back of the book time. Start with Mr. Games with Gold Thurrott.
Just as an FYI, Microsoft over the past week shipped a new redesigned version of the Microsoft Store on Windows 10 on all supported versions. It's, you know, got the new colorful icon and all that. Just today, as we were doing the show, they shipped the new Fluent design versions of the Mail and Calendar apps, which are significantly better looking than they used to be. So, Mary Jo, if you use Mail and Calendar, you might want to check the store because it's kind of a cool update. This is good news for me because I've been updating my book for the
Like she wouldn't know.
He knows. I don't. I can't even see Fluent. I keep hearing about Fluent. I don't know.
I'm telling you. Okay, but when you launch this app, I think you're going to be like, oh, actually, this looks really nice.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. If you're using it now, close Mail and then go to the store.
I'm not using Windows 10 right now.
No, I see. Okay. I've been updating my book for the Fall Creators Update, and I've probably updated about 6 or 7 of the chapters. And 3 of the ones I updated were for the store, the Mail app, and the Calendar app. And guess what? They all have to be updated again because they just changed them for me. So that's what it's like. As for actual tips, the first one would be don't write a book. And then the second one would be it's November 1st as we record this. So that means there's 4 more games with gold. So if you have an Xbox Live Gold subscription, those 2 of those games are available now. 2 of them will be available later in the month. None of these really struck me as being particularly interesting to me personally. There's a Telltale Games, Borderlands game, a racing game, and I don't know, nothing super special. Also, on November 1st today, there are 7 more games added to the Xbox Game Pass. So if you are a subscriber, you should check those out. The most interesting one kind of verifies a theory I had about this, which was that Microsoft offers all these games to people on a subscription, but, you know, much like on Netflix, I mean, doesn't that mean some of those games could be taken away over time? And the answer is yes. One of the games that is available now is called Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain. They actually specified that that game will be available only temporarily. I think it's going to end – I can't find it here, but I think it's going to end at the end of January.
So January 31st, 2018. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, which is, by the way, the day before the next Metal Gear Solid game arrives. That might not be coincidental. But anyway, yeah, so that's how
I love Oddworld New and Tasty. That's my kind of game.
Yeah, there's some good ones there. Hollow Worms.
I've always wanted to play Snake, so I might try the Metal Gear Solid 5 just for fun.
You have to play it with a patch of your one eye, yeah. Much like...
Snake Plissken.
Yeah.
Yep. It isn't Snake Plissken, though, is it? It's just...
No, it's a different snake, and that's irritating.
It's a different one-eyed snake. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that was in no way influenced by... your...
Okay.
It just happened organically, as these things do.
Yeah.
every month, pretty much, I verify that you can still clean and install Windows 10 with a Windows 7 or 8 retail product key. I wrote this up because it's been a year since I wrote about it last. It still works, just so you know. I don't think there are a lot of Windows 7 and 8 product keys floating out in the world that are unused in our retail and would meet this. But if you have one, you can use it to install on a new computer. You can use it to install... Windows 10, that is, in a virtual machine. If you want to do that, you can install it on Boot Camp. You could upgrade from Windows 10 Home to Pro if you have the appropriate Windows 7 or 8 product key. All kinds of cool stuff you can do with it if you just had that product key. But anyway, it still works.
That's really good news. That's fantastic.
Yeah, this isn't in my tip, but I found since writing this that, remember, there was the other workaround where you could get Windows 10 for free, which was if you used assistive technology, right? Microsoft would give you the Windows 10 upgrade for free. They announced this past week that that deal is ending, I think, on December 31st. That means on January 1st, I'm going to have to test to see if the product key thing still works, because it kind of makes sense that they might kill those two things at the same time. But yeah, we will see. And I have 3 app picks. It looks like they're all mobile app picks. Mixer Beta is now available on Android and iOS. You might know that there's already a Mixer and also a Mixer Create app on those platforms. This is a brand new app. It's being completely rewritten to work better and faster and so forth. So if you are a Mixer fan, you will want that. It's free. SwiftKey Beta, only on Android, has been updated with custom photo themes. That means you can add like a personal photo below the virtual keyboard, you know, control the translucency, whatever. Obviously, I did one with the Threat T logo because I don't have a lot of imagination. But anyway, it does work and it's cool. And then Pocket, which is one of my very favorite mobile apps of all time.
I use it all the time.
I use it literally every day.
Yeah.
Was updated on Android.
It lets you save articles, basically, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's like a read it later service. Right. This is actually kind of a big deal for me. So it was updated with continuous read aloud functionality. I believe that read aloud was already available. What that means is you could open an article, find a menu, find a button, and it would the computer voice would read the article back to you. I've never actually done this, but on the newest, or I guess on Android, Google has updated the built-in voices. So there are male and female voices. I think they have voices in different accents and so forth. And it works with that. Continuous read aloud means that you could start reading from anywhere in your queue. And when the article ends, it will go automatically to the next one. And that means that this thing could be used like you might listen to podcasts today or audiobooks. And that's actually really interesting to me. I've been listening to a lot more audio content this year. Probably because I'm turning senile and I can't read it. I find I don't have a lot of opportunity to read.
Yeah, me too. So this way you save articles in it.
Like the following. You need to master math.
This is the voice.
You need all the following. Calculus, differential equations, mathematical statistics.
Like that voice to me doesn't sound great.
It's a little robotic, yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem. But it's still kind of interesting. Like if you've ever used Read Aloud, and like Edge does this for articles. What else does this?
Word. Kindle, I think Word does it now, doesn't it?
Word will do it, yeah. So, you know, like if I'm cooking breakfast or something, like I'll put it on, a lot of times it's an audiobook, but it could be a podcast. It could be this kind of thing. Like this is kind of an interesting way to consume web articles, assuming you can kind of find a voice that you like.
Yeah.
And I did change it from the default, but good to know about. It's free.
That's cool. Yeah. Thank you for the tip because I use that, and that's I've never used the reader feature.
I never even knew it was there.
Yeah. That's awesome.
It's hidden. Now in the new version, it's out. It's advertised better.
Good. Yes, it is. It's right on the front. They say, look, listen, you can read. Yeah, we can read to you. Mary Jo Foley starts with the Enterprise pick of the week.
Yes, I figured since we talked a lot about progressive web apps at the beginning, why not make a developer pick? So I think a lot of people have forgotten this, but on November 15th, Microsoft has a very big developer event happening in New York City called Connect. And they live stream this, I think, in its entirety, at least day one. It's a 3-day event, but I think maybe all 3 days. And this year, it's a little bit different. You know, usually you're going to get your usual Scott Guthrie in his red shirt talking cloud enterprise. Going to get a little Scott Hanselman, going to get a little Nat Friedman talking Xamarin. But this year, you're also going to get a lot of AI and data platform content, which isn't always the case at this event. I think this is their third time doing Connect. So I think we're going to hear a little bit at this event about using Visual Studio for artificial intelligence development, perhaps. I think we definitely will hear more about quantum computing here. Maybe even get the promised SDK and or tools, at least in preview form, for developing quantum computing applications for the simulator. Maybe. I'm just guessing on these things. And I think we could see some other very interesting announcements, especially in the data space, data science, data space, and probably a lot of .NET as usual as well. So if you want to find this and register so you can watch online for free, just search for Microsoft Connect 2017. And there's a save the date. And then you'll be able to stream it live on November 15th.
Yay.
It's an all-day thing, too. So there's a lot of stuff for very varying interests all day.
Our code name pick of the week.
Yeah, this is a really interesting thing I never heard about until I saw a reference to it yesterday. Microsoft, for the past 2 years, has been teaming up the Azure team and the Microsoft Research team to build something they're calling CrystalNet. I think the original name of this was MirrorNet, which makes more sense to me because what it is a complete mirror of the Azure network that they built virtually. And the idea is instead of Microsoft just deploying things in production on Azure and say, hey, let's see if this works. We're deploying this now. They instead can deploy it virtually to CrystalNet and watch to see how it works before they actually turn it out to the general public. So there's this whole network that looks exactly like Azure's network that Microsoft built and they're using. And to me, the very interesting part is at the end of their white paper on this, they say, customers are asking us, hey, could we use this too to troubleshoot in advance what's going on in our own enterprise networks? And they hint that could be coming commercially at some point.
Ah, interesting.
Pretty cool. Yeah. Yep. So that's what CrystalNet is. Yeah. And I think they call it CrystalNet now because they say it's like you're looking into your crystal ball to see how things are going to perform when you put them in production.
Magic.
Magic.
And I was wondering if you were going to mention Julie Larson Green's departure, but it ties into our beer pick of the week.
It does.
Oddly enough. Yep,
As it would.
Yeah.
Right. So Julie Larson Green, who's been at Microsoft 25 years and is known for developing the ribbon in Office, among many other things. She led Windows at one point. She did a lot of different things in Office, even led Xbox and Surface at one point, announced this week that she's leaving. I think yesterday was her last day, in fact.
Yeah.
She's going on to new things. She says she's going to pursue new adventures in building great teams and customer-first products. So I thought, let's do a toast to Julie Larson Green as our beer pick. So why not pick a beer that also has the name Green?
Green beer!
This is not a green beer. It is not a green beer. But I don't think I've ever picked a beer from Treehouse, which is a big oversight on my part. Treehouse is one of the most famous breweries in the world, probably. It's really hard to get their beers. You have to actually go to the brewery pretty much to get them. But this one is called Treehouse Green. It's an IPA. And the reason it's called green is it tastes really fresh. It has a lot of citrusy pineapple, tangerine.
I would like that flavors. With a hoppy beer. I think that's...
Yeah,
that's
it's good.
That's what I'd be looking for.
I've only had this beer once, yeah. I think, ever, because it's so hard to get. But if you ever have anybody who's going to Treehouse or someone who has Treehouse beer, everything they make is amazing. And this Treehouse Green is delicious. And cheers, Julie Larson Green with Treehouse Green.
Yay.
Not only have I not heard of Treehouse, I don't even know where Charlton, Massachusetts is.
It's I know. Charlton. Yeah, when I saw the name, I'm like, where is Charlton?
Charlton, Massachusetts sounds like the name of a fake Massachusetts town that's in a book.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think it
like
is,
we want,
though.
It's not really Charleston, but it's sort of Charleston.
No.
Charleston.
No. Huh. Yeah.
Is it Western Mass or something? I don't even know.
Must be.
Yeah. Western Mass. Yep. Yeah. It's near Sturbridge.
Ah, of course.
Okay. That makes sense.
Well, that wraps it up for this week in Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Another fabulous episode. We do the show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. It will be 1900 UTC next week. You figure that out.
You bet it will.
Yeah.
You figure that one out. And we will talk about whatever's new with Microsoft. You'll find Paul day in, day out, 24/7 at Thurrott.com, Thurrott.com. And, of course, his books at leanpub.com, including The Field Guide to Windows 10. Mary Jo Foley is at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's her ZDNet blog. And between the two of them, there's nothing that happens in Redmond that escapes their beady gaze. or glaze.
Right. Yep.
Their beady-eyed gaze. Thank you so much, you guys. I appreciate your time, and we will see you next week on Windows Weekly. Look at that steely
look at
gaze.
His face.
Look at the beady glaze. Look at him. Brad, what do you think?
No, I think he's definitely a guy. He can't be.
Nice shot. Like, knocked him right out of there.